very busy. Many important matters require a king's attention.
I'm king now. King, 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 king now.
I am king.
I am
king.
I am
kiss it.
I am
kiss it again when I return.
Your fingers or your
king doesn't
fingers
discuss
your
battle plans.
I am
super girl.
Your fingers or your tongue.
I am
the king. I'm telling mother.
Welcome to the Joffrey Podcast. My name's Bubba. You can find me on Twitter at Fit and Trim. That's FitenTrim at Fit and Trim on Twitter. And with me as always is
Catfish. You can
heck
hit me up at CJGman67 because I'm always putting it to CJGman68. And I don't mean that in a Frank and Gregor kind of way.
And we invited back from the winter wilderness our good friend Mork. Mork, how you doing? How can people find you on Twitter?
Oh, they can find me at Extraordinary. That's Extraordinary with a W in front of the final R.
Heck yeah. Everybody, we are going to be breaking down the longest episode of Game of Thrones ever, Season 6, Episode 10, The Winds of Winter. Our guest, Mork. Mork,
yeah.
I want to hear what you gave Episode 10, The Winds of Winter, out of 10. What is your ranking for this season finale of Season 6?
Big fan, 9 double Ds.
Double Ds?
Delicious Descendants.
Okay, you liked it a lot. Describe that.
Oh, well, let me tell you about it, Bubba. I thought it was great. My only complaint was that some of this stuff, some of these loose ends, I wish would have happened maybe a little earlier in the year. Like a lot of the people we said goodbye to, some important, some not as important. I think I would have liked to enjoy some of their absence for a little more.
Catfish, Mork really loved it. Let's hear your ranking out of 10.
I'm going to give it 9.
9.
Either triple T's or triple D's. I couldn't decide tonight.
You got to pick one.
Well, wait a minute. Did you say triple T's?
Yeah, triple T's. Tiny tumbling Tommins.
Oh. Bless your heart.
Oh, is that you normally call it triple D's, I believe?
Triple D's. Yeah, depressed dumped Darios.
Oh, man. It's time for Marine Tinder on for Dario.
Oh, he's going to be enjoying a lot more. Meanwhile, it turns out we found out the perfect partner for Tyrion.
Yeah.
That's Daenerys, because it turns out, just as we saw with Yara last week, she's probably about 4'10".
Hey, now. So you liked it a lot, Catfish. Normally, you would just go ahead and say why you liked it so much.
But this time I was going for the jokes. I liked it because it tied up a lot of different things, even though I was disappointed with what happened with King's Landing earlier. We did talk about what we thought would happen, whether she would take down the whole city, but Cersei does a great job. She takes down just the Sept. She protected Tommen as we thought. She kept him out of harm until he decided to jump without a net. And I just thought it was delicious. And we learned what birds are better than other birds.
What do you mean by that?
Qyburn's litter birds greater than the High Sparrow.
No. They were adorable.
Guys, I am going to go off the reservation.
Okay.
Mork gave it a 9. Catfish gave it a 9. I'm afraid I'm going to be the lone voice of dissent because I'm going to give this 9.5 what I like to call triple D's.
Triple D's?
I thought we had those already. Yeah, what are they?
Well, triple D is a phrase I like to use when I talk about double-digit deaths. We had a lot of people go down tonight. Some people, I'm kind of sad they're gone. R.I.P. Marjorie, so lovely. Such a great actress. Natalie Dormer. Oh, it was hard for her to go.
It was a tough night for redheads.
Yeah.
Right. If you're not dying, you're getting banished.
One alive.
Or do you think the worst redhead was the one sleeping with Pycelle?
That might just be a wig. That would be my bet.
Okay, so everybody, just so you know, we are going to break down this episode like there is no tomorrow, and there's not an episode for another year, so I think we can, but we do have to go through some stuff right here at the top.
Oh, my God.
And that is,
go through?
Well, today we're releasing our feedback, our recap and review of Episode 10. This coming up Friday, we're going to have your feedback out, so we need your feedback in.
Oh, yeah.
Tweet with the hashtag Joffrey of Podcast, or go to the Facebook page. That's facebook.com/DoublePPodcast, plural, facebook.com/DoublePPodcast. We want your feedback. This is it for a year, so write long monologues, write long stuff. We want to hear it.
It's not that we're not done for a year, though.
Oh, no.
In a little bit, we're going to have a wrap-up episode, which is going to cover some of the longer feedback we got. Plus, we're going to do what we've been promising all year, which is in the last few years, we've done chapters from the books that are from Joffrey's point of view.
Yeah.
But this year, since some of the show has progressed past the books, what we're going to do is we're going to rewrite scenes from the show from Joffrey's point of view. And we'll be acting those out for you. As we all know, Bubba is great at two things. One, accents, and two, eye work. One of those works for a podcast, and one of them is a little lost.
Sorry to interrupt you there, Catfish. I should also say that I'm going to be reading, because he went out today like a true boss, I'm going to be reading a Pycelle POV chapter from A Clash of Kings, which also will highlight His Grace King Joffrey's just great work. But, folks, we're not going to be gone entirely. In August, we're back with that vampire apocalypse TV show, The Strain. And it's a podcast entitled Got Your Milk. If you enjoy crazy horror-esque / Monster of the Week mayhem in the Big Apple, you want to listen to the Got Your Milk podcast about the TV show The Strain, go to iTunes, go to Stitcher, download it. Plus, we really love the feedback you guys give us, and you say, oh, have you read this? Have you heard this? Do me a favor, go to iTunes, subscribe to a podcast entitled, sure enough, Double P Podcast Network. That's where we do kind of one-off things, where we did some movie reviews, we did some recap and reviews of TV shows and books.
Mark and I did a very informative cover of a panel for the O.J. Simpson show.
Right, the American Crime Story, People versus O.J. Simpson.
Are we doing prizes yet, or when are we going to do some prizes?
That's right. Listeners, you're going to have to listen the whole way through, because we've been pitching these prizes all season long. And so we're going to jump in and do prizes at various times. For anybody new, these are prizes for people who either tweeted out # Joffrey of Podcasts, or they gave us a written review on iTunes or Stitcher, or they just liked the Facebook page. We love our double L's.
Double L's?
Our loyal listeners. And so we're going to give them some prizes throughout, including right now.
Oh, my goodness.
We're going to get to the first prize. The first prize is going to be a Double W, a Wyndham Wizard prize pack.
Oh, I love it.
We've been talking all season long about how here in the United States and possibly other places where they have Wyndham hotels, the actor who plays Tormund Giantsbane has been their spokesperson as a character.
It's called Spokeswilding.
Right, Spokeswilding. That's a great point, Mark. Yeah. And he's been out there. And so Wyndham Hotels chain has given us some prizes. It's a sleep mask with Tormund's eyes on it, / the Wyndham Wizard's eyes on it, some beards, and some T-shirts. So you're going to win all three. So we're going to give this away right now. We've got a giant bowl here with hundreds of names in the bowl. I wish it had been thousands. We have thousands of downloads, but you guys, please enter. So without further ado, Catfish, pick the first winner of a prize.
Okay, I'm going to hold the bowl up so that people on Periscope can see.
Okay, I will hold the bowl.
Catfish is reaching in. There are hundreds of people. Let's see who's going to win. And who won, Catfish?
It is Erica DB, whose entry was on our Facebook page.
Erica.
Oh, my God. Erica DB.
Congratulations, Erica. Just what every woman needs, a fake beard and Tormund sleeping mask. Heck
yeah. And a T-shirt.
That's right.
Tells you how long your beard is.
Congratulations, Erica. You can write us on Facebook, or you can write me, Bubba, at my very old email address. It's Fitten, F-I-T-T-E-N, @ prodigy.net. Give us your mailing address, and we'll send this right out.
You know what? Sadly, there was two people who still had an AOL address, and one of them died tonight. MasterPycelle @ AOL.com.
Oh, that's tragic. All right, so are you guys ready to get into this episode that theoretically we all loved?
Yeah, let's do it. I'm in.
Theoretically.
Okay. So I'm going to spoil everybody's enjoyment of this great episode by starting with the credits like I always start at the credits. Guys, can you believe we went all of season 6 and there was not a new location in the opening credits? All these locations we ever saw were always in it, even though we went to new places. Heck, we went to the...
I would rather cool library... It for real, then maybe just a glimpse of it. So maybe they were saving their ducats for showing that cool mirror thing in the show.
Right. Well, Mork, you're absolutely right. They could have had the city of Old Town, where Sam and Gilly ended up in the episode, in this opening credit map, but they didn't. I guess those of us who are opening map truthers are just going to have to be disappointed ever so slightly with season six. So
are you saying that the conspiracy for what happened under the Sept is somehow related to what's in the opening credits? Is that what's going on? Is there an alternate history that we should be aware of?
Yeah, and if there is, it's somewhere in that giant library. So.
Now, somebody last week was very excited about the director of Episode 9, Miguel Sapochnik, and he was the one who directed this episode as well. So,
Did you think he did a great job?
I thought he did an awesome job, and there was a lot of different places to go to. There was places that I don't think you were happy to see, and yet it looks like they're going to figure in interestingly. I think you thought any more time in Dorne was a waste. Turned out not to be because Lady Olenna brought her acid tongue to Dorne.
Right. Lady Olenna was cutting the sand snakes short. She didn't want to hear any of it. But guys, I think we have to start where the episode starts.
Okay, let's do it.
In the grand demolishing, everything must go.
Well, I like
the Sept of Baelor.
The episode starts with a bell tolling. Okay, and I have to say this. Do not ask for whom the bell tolls. On this show, the bell tolls for everybody.
It sure does. Now, holy smokes, we had been predicting, based on some of the foreshadowing the show had been doing, and to be honest, there's some foreshadowing in the books, that there was going to be a bloody Baelor Sept, and this was incredible / tough. I love that the episode started so much kind of with just music. There was no dialogue, showing everybody getting ready for
everybody
these big trials.
Everybody was putting on their trial best.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Cersei was putting on her nipple clamps were slightly off, but she looked good in that. She had her shoulder pads rocking, her shoulder pads.
Marjorie was getting ready. Tommen was getting ready. And guess what, Catfish? Your boy, the High Sparrow, he changed out his dirty smock for a clean smock.
Well, that just goes to show you his absolute power is corrupting. Next thing, you'll be wearing a three-piece suit.
Yes. Cannot wait to see him next episode.
I was going
to
say, next time he's going to be swept up. Now, Mork,
into one of those sacks.
Mork, do you remember what you compared when you saw the High Sparrow in a new outfit? You joked that apparently somebody's out of potatoes.
Yeah. Well, apparently someone's potatoes are scattering all over the marketplace as we speak.
They're fried.
The
fried
High
potatoes.
They're fried.
Oh man.
No, it was gradual.
Yeah.
Tension was building. We knew it was not going to go the way that Tommen thought in his pure little heart that it would go. And I rather enjoyed this. I would go to church more often.
Now, you made a good point, Bubba. For all the talk about the common people,
right?
Where were the 99% in the Baelor Sept?
No, everybody who came to these trials was dressed to the nines, except the poor person, the only person who really was there for a trial, Sir Loras Tyrell. And this was just horrific. What happened to everybody was horrific, but Loras had the worst last day on Earth ever, didn't he?
He did. It was pretty bad. I was surprised that if you're going to do something so detailed, you're going to do it while you're holding a guy down, struggling with such an imprecise instrument.
Well, they practice. They practice a lot. So
On struggling dudes.
I do
want to say that
small cats.
For all the people who prepared for this, I think it was your old friend Picel who prepared the best. He had the best pregame.
He always does. You don't last as long in the game if you don't have a good pregame like Picel.
And so, R.I.P. Picel. Why don't we go there? Because Picel, we always knew he's a bit of a ladies' man, in that he pays ladies to be with him, a man.
and they are. I want to say slightly younger than him. Maybe not legal age, even in King's Landing.
Right. Picel is more like, age is just a number, I don't ask. So Picel is coming down, and then I happen to recognize that this was one of Qyburn's little birds. So I was suddenly like, uh-oh, this is trouble. And so she comes and whispers in Picel's ear, which leads him down to Qyburn's laboratory, where he somehow is expecting usurper King Tommen to be, and that was the first sign.
Well, he's expecting it because that's what the little bird told him. That's, you should never listen to grubby little waifs, and I include the High Sparrow in that.
Did you like, I mean, Picel, everybody, I guess some people had a quick death because it was just one boom and you're gone. Picel, he went out pretty painfully.
He did. I predicted this earlier, not like it was very smart, but I said Picel was going to go down this year, and he was going to go down hard.
Oh, and
after he backtalked to Cersei. I knew it was going to be... it was going to be a double P for him. It's going to be a painful Picel.
Right. Pincushion Picel is what I thought you meant by double P. I also thought that this scene could have been scored to I Believe That Children Are Our Future, because Picel would have so disagreed. But I did like, this is silly to say.
Do you believe Qyburn's like, yeah. No, sorry, it's not personal.
Right.
You know.
I thought Qyburn, for, hey, I'm about to murder you, was as gentle as possible.
He yeah. really could have.
This is, if I was going to be murdered, I would actually like someone like Qyburn to do it. He's gentle.
Well, then you want to die exactly the way Picel did, because he had a little bit, little finger and then a little Qyburn.
Well,
that was his last day on Earth.
I suppose. I think the one nice lesson from all this is that anyone watching will never listen to a small child in the street again.
No.
They'll never follow a small child ever again.
I'm not quite sure they would do it, why they would do it in the first place.
Well, clearly, it's a good idea based on what Picel and what's his name, former Lannister, were doing, following these children around in the underground.
Yeah, well, we'll get to Lancel in a minute, but I kind of feel like I have to eulogize...
Hey, Grand Maester Picel, there was a man who survived many kings. He was with, before the Mad King, he was served them. Then he served the Mad King. He served Robert. He still serves his grace, King Joffrey. And he served Tommen.
And he also had lots of lovely young ladies serve him.
Right.
He was a giver and a taker.
What do you think? What do you think? Since we're channeling Double P, what do you think Grandmaster Picel's one true regret is?
That he didn't stay in bed today.
This is, you know, Picel's not been a major player in this.
No.
But what I'm
By
really sad, time. What I'm really sad about,
yeah.
is that this could be the end of you doing Picel.
No.
That was my favorite thing.
Double bite.
He'll go on forever. He'll always be with us. This actor has been with the show since season one, so I want to tip my cap, my Joffrey crown, to Julian Glover, who played Grandmaster Picel.
He was good.
Also in the third Indiana Jones movie, also in Empire Strikes Back, a guy who's been in a million things, and I think we'll all remember him. Doing whores.
You know,
not a lot of acting when it came to that part of Picel's character, from
this,
what we're told.
Do what you do best.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So let's get to Loras's trial. This really wasn't so much a trial, is it felt like we later found out that Margaery had done all this stuff. Margaery had bent to the High Sparrow's will. She had done all this thing so her son, or excuse me, her brother could get off this hideous crime.
But
the way they treated him, that Margaery should have immediately left when she saw that. She should have been like, that's the worst thing I've ever seen.
I don't think she would leave. She's still trying to protect her brother, but I think things went very bad. And I was actually a little sad to see Margaery go.
Yeah, I am too.
There's a super anti-redhead bias on this show, for sure.
It's true.
No doubt. But, you know, I liked her. She was like a scheming junior. She couldn't do it like Olenna. She couldn't do it like Cersei. But I think given time, she could have become a super schemer.
She couldn't quite get there. And so this is one of my small quibbles for the show.
Okay.
I think she deserved her own death. That's, you know, like, let's we could have gotten rid of Papa Tyrell earlier. No one would have cared. And even Loras. But we're all watching this, and we're all thinking that, okay, obviously there's a deal in place to really go after Cersei. Maybe it's going to work, maybe it's not going to work. But Margaery was someone who, for a little while at least, really for second, third, and fourth years of the show, really played the game.
Yeah, and she played it well. I would say,
yeah,
I'm going to miss Margaery so much too. I would say the reason why her character, theoretically, is leaving us now is because on Game of Thrones, one of the things you have to do is you always have to imagine that someone will do something worse. You know, like, she never could stoop to Cersei's level. You know, she was catty with Cersei, and she schemed at times.
Right.
But she was never able to see the craziness, the crazy depths that Cersei would go to. First in bringing them the High Sparrow and getting her and her brother arrested. And then the Suicide Pact. I like that they made her smart enough to figure it out. And I'm with you, Mark. She's been in such an important part of this show that I wanted her out.
That she would be, it would be secondary to the joy of seeing, you know, the High Sparrow getting immolated, for us not even to really see her immolated. However, to give you guys hope, our loyal listener BT Mac 11 notes Marjorie gets to reunite with King Joffrey and plan their return.
That is true.
So, that, I mean, always hopeful, always thinking of the future.
That's all we have.
King Joffrey. Exactly. Exactly.
So I just want to run through all the characters who really enjoyed the barbecue on this on this
okay,
Sunday.
Great.
Meaning
great. Kevin Lannister.
Right, Kevin Lannister. He was really not in the show much, but Uncle Kevin, he was a character dating back to season one. He first appeared in season one in Tywin's camp when Tyrion showed up with his mountain men. Ser Loras appeared in season one. We met Margaery in season two. We met Mace, their father, in season four. And Lancel Lannister, we also met in season one. They all go out here in a bang. And it was just brutal. I want to ask you, Mork, did you know what was happening when you saw Cousin Lancel follow that little kid through that crazy maze?
Yeah, no. I mean, I didn't know he'd be going underneath the Sept, because I don't know the geography of the town that well, of King's Landing that well. But yeah, no.
Do you know it?
Enough to be dangerous.
Okay.
Like, if you drop me off in Flea Bottom and, you know, gave me a couple of coins, and I could do some damage.
Oh yeah, you'd head right to Baelish's.
I couldn't afford Baelish's. It's been well established. But anyway, I was hoping someone like him, because he participated with Cersei in her we all know I have nothing against incest, but you know, he did participate in that. He did help kill Robert Baratheon.
Oh yeah.
I was hoping he'd get a little more brutal death with Ser Mountain.
That's a good call. I actually thought Cousin Lancel's death was incredibly dramatic. I knew he couldn't reach that candle in time, but he tried. You know, once again, a tip of the crown to Lancel for trying.
What was nice was, to me, how that was slowly revealed.
Yeah.
I mean, for the longest time, you thought, okay, is that the torch he's holding? Is that somehow going to catch it? And then it's slowly revealed, okay, some of the barrels appear to be leaking. And then just at the end, we see, oh, there's some candles down there. Now, would you have volunteered for that job, Mork?
To what? To light the candles and leave?
Yes.
Well, that's the only way. If I'm one of Qyburn's little birds, that's the only way I'm going to get, some extra dirt to rub on my face that day. So probably yes. But here's a question.
Yeah.
How come years ago during Blackwater, how come Tyrion did not know about all this wildfire then?
Well, this is going to be something we're going to have to assume that the show kind of did a bizarre explanation on, because that's a great question, Mark. It felt like Tyrion, when he discovered the wildfire in season two, he found that out from, you know, blackmailing Cousin Lancel,
right,
who said Cersei's going to use it. And then he met the pyromancer and he was like shocked at all this wildfire. But then in last week's episode, he dropped to Daenerys, well, my brother Jaime told me there's wildfire. So
there's here, there, and everywhere.
So right, the only way you could assume that technically would work is if somehow when they were together in maybe Tyrion's prison cell in season four, Jaime's like, yeah, you think you had it bad. You know, back when I stabbed the Mad King in the back, I found out all this stuff.
Right. I guess Tyrion was actually somebody, and, you know, hopefully he continues to do it, who keeps the actual greater good in mind. So he was using, he would have used it either at Blackwater, or I feel like he would have put it in some newer barrels than what we saw it in, because it was just leaking out all over the place.
Is anybody a big fan of Nickelodeon, the 90s? When BT Mac 11, when he saw that wildfire dripping and the green stuff, he's like, oh, it's like an episode of You Can't Do That on Television.
The Nickelodeon Kids Show is going to use wildfire next time around. It's gotten a lot harsher than what we grew up on.
We had projected that maybe Cersei was going to blow up a lot of portions of the city and basically leave it in flames. And this was a much better plan where she knew everyone would be. And she makes sure she gets Tommen out of there. That's perfect because she gets to get rid of all those people and also not just take a figurative strike at the religion, but physically just, okay, there's no more Sept. I'm in charge.
Oh, man.
It was a great move.
I loved this move of when Tommen turns around. You know, he's been accessorizing. He's been getting his outfit great. And he's like, okay, I'm King Tommen. I'm ready to go to the trial. And he turns around, and there is Sir Gregor. And it was like, you're not going anywhere, kid. I love this scene.
I still didn't know what was going on, though. I didn't know why he was taking him somewhere else. I thought he was in trouble. I didn't realize he was taking him to safety.
I thought for a minute that he was going to kill him. Cersei, I think that I'm glad she did this. I think this is great for her. I think she's, you know, she's obviously back. She's on the throne. But she should have known how much that Tommen cared about Margaery. So she should have thought ahead.
Well, he wasn't getting any from her. I don't know. Maybe that made him want
it more. Patient enough.
Well, I will say this.
Enough,
I liked the fact that that they made Margaery the only one who realized, oh, we're in trouble.
Right, and I loved Margaery. Once again, they gave her that moment. She's always been smart. I love that she was smart in this instance.
And she essentially says to the High Sparrow, cut the shit.
Right.
She gets rid of her pious subterfuge to say, whoa.
Right.
Even more than when she was upset about her brother. She's like, we got to get out.
Right, and Mork, going to your thing about Margaery would get her own death, when I saw she realized it, I thought, oh, she might escape.
Right.
But then when the Sparrows and the Faith Militant block everybody from leaving, I was like, oh, my, these idiots. Oh,
yeah.
My Lord.
Yeah, well, and that's I mean, I'm glad. I mean, the thing, and we argued about this a time ago, Catfish, but what exactly did they want? They wanted to be in control, okay, but then what exactly were they going to do? Like, everyone else had, like, a specific reason, mainly survival, mainly expanding their own personal holdings and all that.
Right.
But, you know, with the Faith Militant, it was just, you know, it's there, we're going to do it, and that's it.
I believe he had what he wanted and was going for more, which was total control of the city.
And to strike down, quote unquote, the powerful oppressors. There's a reason why. Cousin Lancel, who was, as you said, complicit with half the things Cersei was accused of. But Cousin Lancel, did you ever see him really, you know, in a prison? Did you ever see him suffer? No, because by that point he was no longer one of the elite's oppressors. He had joined in.
Right.
And I think he would have been fine. Like you're saying, Catfish, just controlling everybody through intimidation. You follow the faith, suck it.
Yeah, I mean, he, considering where he was when we first saw him, you know, personally ministering to poor people, and now he's essentially in charge of everything that's going on, I would say he achieved his goals right before they seemed to go up in smoke.
I'm glad either way. I mean, I'm glad he's gone because he just felt like he was a big time suck. And oh, that's beautiful.
Well, we're watching the effects right now of the Sept blow up. What do you think? Was this great effects work? Yeah, it was incredible.
I loved it, and I love Jonathan Pryce's uh-oh moment.
Where he upset his smock, where he dirtied his smock, like, uh-oh.
And look, this
I
is
like
horrible.
Some of the little people got killed.
Yeah,
far
exactly.
Away.
It's people.
Satisfying Bubba's concern earlier that not enough little people were killed.
The little people always get screwed.
And then you see Cersei having her victory wine.
So I don't.
It's a special vintage.
It's a special vintage. I don't mean to jump ahead too far,
spite.
But I couldn't help but notice, you know, while everyone is time traveling, basically in the time that it takes Varys. Well, not Varys, but Lady Olenna to arrive at Dorne.
Well, she had left,
oh, she had
I guess,
left.
In episode
okay.
7. She
okay,
left
but,
in
okay,
episode
so
7.
Varys,
yeah, she told
Varys,
her, get out.
But Varys is in Dorne. So the time it takes Varys to get from Dorne back to Meereen and then onto a boat, Cersei has not changed her clothes. is that a fair assessment?
Well, she was wearing black, and then Tommen pulled his move, and so why change?
Why change? There you go. No.
Let's get to it. Before we get to Tommen's fateful decision, does anybody want to give any regret to what happened to the Shame Septa, who technically is
she's
still
patient.
Alive. Septa Unella is still alive. I want to have a better call. That's where we predict things. Are we going to see Septa Unella still being tortured in season 7? Is
Hell
this?
Yeah.
Oh, my Lord. Poor Septa Unella. Oh.
Hells.
Well, I did talk last week about how we're losing some of the big bads.
Oh, yeah.
We're losing a lot of them. Seems like we might have a new one. We've got a new Ramsay on the case. Now, the one thing I will say, though, is that, and I don't want to spoil anything, but it's not surprising that it's a surprise, but I'm surprised it appears now that a new big bad who's going to be really bad is Cersei.
Oh,
she's
yeah.
She's back in power, yeah. And she is upset.
Oh, my Lord. And we had somebody, I believe it was Dooley's left leg, make a great/terrible joke in the Periscope where he said, Unella's got a fella.
Oh, boy.
Let me tell you, Sir Gregor, when he took off that mask, he wasn't looking too good. And it was.
I think she might like it, but let me say something.
Yeah.
No shame in that.
Oh, my Lord. And so I think many of us, after last season's.
How long have you been waiting for that?
I just thought of it.
I think many of us, after last season, the way Cersei got treated, we wanted revenge on the High Sparrow.
Yeah.
We wanted revenge on this Septa Unella, the Shame Septa.
Yeah.
But this is too cruel. I didn't want this to happen to her. Oh, my Lord. This made me feel
totally
sorry
fine
for her.
With it. I don't feel bad for it at
number
all.
Number one, I'm fine with it. And number two,
yeah.
It'd been a long time since we really saw Cersei bite into something. And
yeah.
Her monologue about what she loves to do, so good. You know what? Cersei's, I like Cersei's attitude with life.
Well, I think
if things feel good, do it.
Do what you like.
Do what you like.
You know, whenever we have a tragedy like this, where you know the entire sept is blown to smithereens,
right?
I like to try to take a glass, you know, half full approach. Which, you know, for the High Sparrow, that Cersei did confess her sins. she absolutely did.
She
did owned
indeed.
Up to him 100%.
She finally fully
so
confessed.
It's progress.
To Unella.
It was great.
Mork, I got to be honest. When I heard you say that the glass half full, I think with Cersei, it's like 20 glasses. Half, you know, full.
Yeah.
20 full glasses. There are no half glasses with Cersei.
Apparently, there's as much wine in the kingdom as there is wildfire.
Well, there's more wine now.
Because she don't mind pouring it all over Septa Unella.
There's definitely more wine now. No, I think this is great. Back to the Walk of Shame. After that happened, you knew that she needed to get her mojo back.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, I mean, she's the queen.
Oh, no, we've got some horrible comments, which I love, from our Double L's loyal listeners. Matthew Papa says, wine waterboarding. I thought the same thing.
No, he's wrong, because it was just pure wine boarding.
Right.
So
Stacey Mann says, Sir Gregor is Mountain Unella.
Oh.
Whoa.
Oh, that is
Ouch.
Really bad.
That
Ouch.
You know, that's what I want to know. Well, we've got a good question, but let me ask you this first. Do you think we're supposed to imply that he is torturing her, or is this more of the rape which this show loves so much?
No, this show would never show rape.
Because he's on the side. He's on their side of her. It's not like he's come around.
Kyber had to cut some corners when putting the mountain back together. So I don't think the Septa is safe ever again.
Now this is a great question. I don't know whether we're gonna cover an hour later. Okay, go ahead.
Well, let's answer that question in one sec, but let's go back to the hideousness, which you just asked, and I'm going to try to answer it seriously.
Okay.
About is the mountain sexually assaulting Septa Unella? And one of the things, of course, if we remember back to the great mountain fight versus the Red Viper, Oberyn Martell, is Oberyn kept saying about his sister, he's like, you raped her, you murdered her. And you know, there are just terrible things that the mind can imagine that are going on. And so it's, thank goodness, the door is closed and we can...
And we don't have to worry about it.
No, well, I was going to say we can almost pray that she gets a quick death somehow. I mean, no.
That's not what Cersei promised her.
She doesn't deserve a quick death. She, like, if you were a SEPTA,
yeah,
and you're told, okay, so we got this lady. Mm-hmm. You think she's done some bad stuff. Oh, by the way, she probably had her husband, the king, murdered. Go in and, you know, just fuck with her for a little while. I would have called in sick that day.
I will still say
yeah,
that almost nobody on the show deserves to be raped by a hulking dead man.
Well, the one person who did died last week. So, yeah.
Okay, so then let's get to it. Tommen vanquishes the crown. What do you call it when you give up the crown?
Relinquishes
the crown.
He abdicates.
And as soon as I saw Tommen in this open shutter, yeah. I said, uh-oh, out
loud. I saw it, and I thought, no, this can't be happening.
Do you think the guy who, the steward who was apologizing, worst apology of all time.
First of all, that guy... He's going to wish he was Septa Unella after Cersei's done with him. The guy who left Tommen alone.
Well, here's a question. Do you think that after Tommen took a header, that he at least tried on the crown and danced around for just a minute when no one was looking? Or he resisted the temptation?
Oh, my God.
I would hope that he did whatever he would want to do if whatever the last thing he wanted to do. I hope he crossed it off his bucket list.
Oh, man. Called in sick?
Man, you guys are so tough. This kid, God bless him, he usurped King Joffrey's crown.
Little brothers do that. Can't blame him.
Joffrey would have never done this.
Did you guys know? When I saw the
he's open weak.
Window, did you know?
Yeah. He's weak. You know what? I kept talking about how he was just influenced by the last person that he saw. My guess is on the way out, the steward was like, jump out the window.
Yeah.
And then he did. That's what he did.
No, yeah. He definitely did. So, okay, here's a question that is, should I hold my question? Should we do this one that's up on the Periscope?
Yeah, let's do that. That's a great point, Mark. Mork, let's do this one that's up on the Periscope.
All right. Ed Millions asked, do you think Cersei intends to have Jaime rule with her?
Oh, boy. Jaime, who ruined his reputation, he's been known as the Kingslayer because he prevented somebody from setting off wildfire in the city. And now he has to go back and the quote-unquote, the woman he loved, the woman he kept saying, I've got to get back to, got to get back to.
Well, he had an amazing, he monologued Edmure about how much he loved Cersei and all that mattered was getting back to her. And so that's what she talks about. Now, as Cersei did her monologue tonight, she seemed to indicate there were lots... She had more than one interest. Jaime has one interest, and that is getting back to the woman he loves.
Well, but Cersei thought... And this is where, you know, she miscalculated, obviously. But Cersei thought that she'd be able to... You know, Tommen would have a rough couple of weeks, but then he'd come out of it. And, you know, she'd get him someone new. I don't think Jamie's going to be capable of forgiving her for, you know, doing what ultimately led to Tommen killing himself.
Oh, no.
We'll see. I thought for a minute, and I would love to see this down the road, I thought for a minute we were going to get Sir Jaime facing down the, you know, the mountain. Maybe we will.
I think we still might see this. I think there's a good chance that Jamie's going to want to kill her.
Look, sure. I mean, yeah. No. I think he's going
to. And to kill her, he would have to go through Frank and Gregor the mountain. Yeah. And so let's stay in King's Landing for a bit.
All right. Let me just have it real quick, and we don't need to explore it, but. Yeah. Based on Cersei's history, do you think she ever considered trying to console Tommen in her special way?
She should.
Maybe she should have.
I think if she had the chance, we would have seen it. I think she screwed this up one big time. I think many of us had the thought when she is with Qyburn. And she's looking down. She's like, let me see him. I thought she might try to say, hey, is there any way to bring him back?
Yeah.
But instead, not bring him back, she's going to have him burnt in his ashes in the place where the Septa Baelor is.
Well, so we know.
Painful.
Well, it'd be very painful. All right, so.
And we do know that, interestingly enough,
yeah,
that a few years ago when they did a flashback to Cersei, that it has come true. All her children have died before her.
That's for sure.
Now, in this episode,
yeah,
as you remember, Mork, when Bran had his flashes that we covered frame by frame on that one episode.
Episode 6 of this year.
Two of those flashbacks we saw tonight. One of them was the wildfire burning, and the second one is one we'll cover much later. But I thought it was interesting that two of those things, and we saw those over and over again, the wildfire we saw over and over again.
Yeah, it blowing up, right?
Yeah. So that happened, and one other thing, which we'll get to, but I'm sure you'll remember it when we get to it.
In an hour from now, let's stay in King's Landing. Let's close it up. We're going to skip over Jaime's adventures at the Twins, and instead, we're going to go to this shot of Jaime and Bronn and theoretically the Lannister army riding to King's Landing. They're up on a bluff. They're up on a city overlooking the city, and they look down, and they see the devastation. The Sept of Baelor is still burning. Oh, my goodness. Jaime in particular looks devastated. And then it cuts to...
Well, it took them all to get the littles to put the fire out.
Then we cut straight to Cersei
still
walking in.
Dress.
She still got her two people over her shoulder. Disgraced Maester Qyburn and Frankenmountain, Sir Gregor. And this was something many people had wondered about. Well, if Tommen died, who would the crown pass to? And I have no idea about regency and stuff like this. But I could never have guessed that Cersei would claim it herself.
Well, it's interesting. She is slightly older than Jaime, even though they're twins.
Right.
So the question is, though, the primacy in this world usually goes to the men. So the fact that she has decided she's going to be crowned, even though she knows Jaime's coming back, probably.
Well, Jaime has no relation to the crown, though. You know, she was queen. She married King Robert.
That is true.
Exactly. Yeah. So the kids are dead.
Queen Cersei, first of her name, queen of the Andals and the first men. Protector of the Seven Kingdoms. Oh, my goodness.
And the new Hand of the Queen.
I mean, yeah, she's all positions together. And so this is...
No, I think Qyburn
is the Hand of the Queen.
Oh, that's true.
He's got the pin now. Yeah.
Well, what I was saying is, I believe, Mork, you mentioned this on the show. I think we can all see it. We had the War of Five Kings set up across Westeros. And we are about to get a war of queens like there's no tomorrow.
I know. All of a sudden, you know, it's like the show is making up for all the just crazy raping. Now putting women into the positions.
Well, we'll see. We
got to see what Frank and Gregor does.
We will see.
Do you guys want to describe this look between Queen Cersei and Jaime?
Well, I think if Jaime was on board with this, clearly by now he knows his son is dead. I think if he was on board, he'd be standing next to her.
Well, he just got there. I think there is, I think there's sadness. We'll find out later, i.e. next year, whether he blames her for Tommen doing his own little bird imitation poorly.
Yeah.
But also, I think Cersei's not taking any crap anymore. Also, remember, part of the reason why Jaime killed the Mad King was because he wanted to burn everybody with the wildfire.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So what happens? Cersei turns around and destroys a bunch of people with the wildfire.
A few.
But he's got to be more upset with what happened with their last child.
I don't think he's going to care at all about the Sept. I think...
Oh, I do. I do. I think...
Why do you think that? I don't believe he cares about the littles.
He doesn't care about the Tyrells, and he doesn't care about the Sparrow. I mean, he would want the Sparrow dead. He threatened to kill the Sparrow. He's fine with killing the Faith Militant, but Tommen is dead. And Cersei's whole motivation throughout the show, which has been amazing and why she's such an awesome character, has been all about protecting her family and making sure they get what's theirs. So now she has no family. I mean, other than Jaime.
Right.
Do you start working on lucky number four?
I agree with Mork where I'm not sure why he should be upset with her. She didn't blow up the whole city.
Well, he should be upset because Tommen's dead because of her.
Yeah.
Right. He can say that, but, you know, I would just say, well, apparently our son was just too weak-willed, not like Joffrey. Joffrey was the savior.
Well, no one can live up to Joffrey.
If... if Jamie can see the big picture, which maybe I'm embedding in with something TV show Jamie hasn't given us, he's got to see that to destroy the house of your ally, the Tyrells, despite the cattiness and the fights between them, they were their allies. And to destroy that house entirely, to take all the heirs away, to kill the head of the house, Mace Tyrell, I can't see Jamie. I mean, yes, he's going to be upset that Tom, and he's going to be upset about all of it. I promise
okay,
you that.
That point I hadn't considered. Yes, he can be upset that her revenge was not indiscriminate.
Well, I think you're also right, Mork, in that Cersei is the new big bad. She's the one. She's the one who's going to be the last human villain. She's replaced Ramsay as the biggest monster that the show has.
Yeah, that was a great thing that you said, Mark.
Thanks, Catfish. It's about time. Drop the mic. No, I think this is why I'm excited for the next couple of years, and maybe we can save this for later on if you want to jump back to earlier on in this amazing episode. But for now, all the players who are left, and we'll get to this in a second, I think there's a couple players left who are now basically irrelevant. But Cersei matters.
Right.
Dany matters.
Right.
The Greyjoys matter.
Okay.
Sort of. Sansa matters. So everyone matters. Everyone is. I think we're heading into a knife fight spread out over, you know, a few hundred miles.
Right. And what has happened was, and I've complained about this repeatedly about the books, is every time I think they're sort of narrowing the focus, it starts a new book and we expand where we're going. And what I like is, it really feels like this show is narrowing down. We've yep. got a fight between the North and King's Landing, and North, King's Landing,
Waters,
Dorne, yeah. like that. No, I think we have a fight. I think we've got another fight, just like we had.
Well, let's hold on.
Just like we had with Ramsay, with the Boltons. I think we're going to have an internecine fight for everything south of the Wall, and then the winners of that go against the White Walkers.
Okay,
but I mean, look, we can
if Cersei and the Lannisters have enough people to fight.
Right,
left.
But what they don't have is enough to handle what's coming across the water.
Right, but just like the Boltons and the Starks and everybody in the North should have banded together, these people don't think like that. They don't think, okay, let's band together with
haven't
our
they been
enemies.
Watching?
They right.
Haven't, they don't did think, they see what happened last week?
They don't band together with their enemies. They fight their enemies, and then with whatever ragged army is left, then the White Walkers, they'll fight the White Walkers. Do you disagree?
Oh, yes, I disagree, but I just want to wrap up King's Landing by saying okay. The wrap up King's Landing has me looking so forward to next season. It has a million thoughts racing in my mind of what could happen. And that shot of Cersei on the throne, it was great. A great way to end the season.
Absolutely. It was great. She is back in charge now. There is nobody to question her except for
her brother husband.
Her brother yeah. lover.
Her brother.
All right, so it's time to give away another set of prizes. What prize are we going to give away now, Catfish?
Oh, my goodness. Well, we've got a bunch more. You know, let's give away something different this time. Let's give away something that I picked up, so let me grab it.
Okay, so once again, this went to our loyal listeners who tweeted out hashtag Joffrey Podcast, give us written iTunes reviews or Stitcher reviews, or liked our Facebook page. So, Catfish, describe this next prize.
Okay, this next prize is a mystery Game of Thrones vinyl figure.
Ooh.
It's in a box, and it's sealed. I did not open it.
Great.
And so it could have any number of people in it. It could have the Hound in it. It could have a dragon in it.
Daenerys sealed. In it.
It
many
could have
characters.
Daenerys. It could have some people I don't know. Oh, it looks like the
Night King.
Jon Snow is Night in King. There.
All right, so it's a vinyl figure. You're going to find out what it is. We haven't opened it. It is a complete surprise, but it is your prize if your name gets drawn. So shake up the bowl, Catfish. Pull out a name.
Okay, I'm so excited to pull out a name. I want to pull it from the bottom, and it is Ian Keen from Facebook.
All right, Ian Keen. Hey, hey. This prize is yours. Write us on Facebook and give us your mailing address.
It could be rare and metallic versions. It could be some dragons.
Excellent. We're going to give away prizes throughout the entire podcast. Guys, we've got to trek just a bit north and a bit west from King's Landing. We got to go to the Twins, Walder Frey, everybody's favorite crusty old bastard. He is celebrating his victory over
the Tullers.
He's like
the one non-bastard
on the
show.
The Tullys, yeah.
But yeah, no, he's, God bless him. He knows how to give a toast. He knows how to hold a party in a dimly lit room. Yeah, no, I think this was the social event of the season, unless...
unless you wanted to leave it alive.
Unless, yeah.
So, Walder Frey, he's toasting the troops. He's got Lannister troops there. He's got his Frey troops there. He's got his two named sons, Black Walder to his left, and his other one, Lothar, to his right. But we don't focus on them. We go to Bronn and Jaime for a bit, and Bronn and Jaime notice a very attractive serving girl. And as soon as we saw this serving girl, and specifically that band around where the hairline went, I began thinking of no one, a.k.a. Arya Stark.
Oh, I thought you meant no one.
Was it based on the actual hair, or was it the way that she poured wine for a Lannister? She seems to be, it's like she's had some experience doing
that. She is good at serving Lannisters.
Hey.
I was very shocked that she didn't kill more Lannisters, because these people were the enemy. And here she could have poisoned the whole room, but instead she thought that revenge is best served cold or hot. I'm not sure if that was a hot pie. Hot pie shout out or cold pie.
Let me say this. There were a lot of things said in this episode, but none that I disbelieved more than Bronn saying he wasn't in the mood for some ladies.
Right.
You know Bronn is always ready with his sword.
He proved it.
Wink, wink.
He proved it. He did not need to wink. He actually, and I like... You know, when he's with a wench, it's just, don't call me sir. No need to call me sir. Like, I like that. That's probably why these gals like him so much.
Now, one of the things, I think, Mork, you love this Double D.
Double D?
Delicious dialogue where Walder Frey's trying to bond with Jaime. He's like, hey, you're a Kingslayer, so am I. Same.
Yeah.
Hashtag same.
Yeah. You're a Kingslayer. I slit. Well, yeah, not even a king's throat.
What I like is that Walder essentially says, yeah, you know, I do things the old-fashioned way, like being the general manager of an Arby's. I'm leading the beef charge.
Yeah.
No, like being the GM.
Walder Frey was in, he was fantastic. I kind of wish he was around a little more to get more of these speeches. I'd rather have more of these speeches, a couple more, and a little bit less of Tyrion, you know, joking around in the throne room with Grey Worm. But
right, this actor,
I'll take what I can get.
This actor, David Bradley, he's been with the show since the first season, and he is a great actor. It's fun to hate Walder Frey.
And it's fun to hate Walder Frey and love the guy who's the King Strigoi killer over on The Strain. FX is The Strain. Got your milk. Hashtag shout out. Sorry, Bubba.
Right. He totally saved. He's alive on The Strain, but this was it here. So the Lannisters escape before Arya can get her revenge. Now, she has three people on her list. Strike one in Walder Frey. The other two are, of course, now Queen Cersei and the Mountain. Oh, boy.
So Jaime, and it's interesting to me that Jaime was never on the list.
Right. Well, she has never, except in the very first episode, I believe, ever been in the same place where Jaime has been.
Right. Okay. All right. I'll give you that.
Both Jaime and Arya were in Harrenhal for a bit, but Arya was only there for season two, and Jaime arrived there in season three. But they've never technically, as far as I can remember,
sure. But I'm sure she knows
he couldn't get on the list. But you're right; he's a Lannister.
He's a Lannister, and he's a special Lannister, and you know, so it just seemed like a freebie for her. But it's nice to see. Now, I just assumed, and correct me, please, but I just assumed that when she resigned, you know, from the faceless men, that she lost her power and she just got to go free. But obviously, she's got all those skills.
Right. You would assume that it's got to take some magic, it's got to take some special potions to be able to really wear somebody's face.
Well,
I
think she graduated. When you kill someone who's already graduated, I think that's graduation.
That counts. Stacey Mann, quick shout out on Periscope. Fry a la mode. Amazing.
I love...
How soon did you guys know that the sons were in the pie?
No, I didn't even know when she said... I thought, oddly... Is this some sort of dream or something? Like, is the hall full and someone kind of, like, invading his consciousness?
It's very
dim. You know
what
I mean? I didn't know what was going on. Like, so, yes, when she says here, I didn't know until she pointed at the pie. And I was like, oh, snap.
When did you realize it, Mork?
I knew something was up. I thought that she was actually... I thought that Jamie was having him killed. It was his pride talking. Just because... And you guys know the geography better than I, but, you know, I didn't know that she had a teleporter. I didn't know she could get there that quickly, especially in the middle. Like, she wasn't going coast to coast. She was going... She's in the Riverlands, so she had to go into the heart of the country.
Right. It wasn't just that she sailed across the narrow sea. She had to go deep into the Riverlands to get there. That's exactly right.
Glad to see her, you know, ish again. And glad that she's doing well, and she obviously completed her studies.
You know, you're going to have to... You know, when they say you watch something, you kind of give up your disbelief. I'm forgetting the phrase right now. Willing suspension of disbelief.
Right.
And you just... For shows like this, books like this, you do have to do that as far as travel. Just because, honestly, it would take months and months probably for people to get around, and you just can't have that. And then it's, you know, you can't have 32-year-old Arya killing people on their deathbed.
Right. No, and that's totally fair. And there's some people shouting out some very logical things on Periscope right now. But I think it's the kind of thing where... And we didn't see her last week, so maybe she had a whole episode of travel time. So, all right, I'll give you that. But, I guess I wanted more Walder Frey.
It's probably better than, you know, George R. R. Martin said himself he had a problem reconciling time. He called it, you know, the Myronese knot problem, right?
He has two different things. Those aren't related.
So one thing that we skimmed over...
But it did
over,
have to do with Daenerys and having a problem kind of matching up her...
A bit.
Storyline with the rest.
You mean people arriving in Meereen. Sure, sure, sure.
One thing that we skimmed over that I thought was a great line of Double D...
Double D?
Thank you, delicious dialogue. Was Walder and Jaime talking about giving the family a bad name. I enjoyed that. I thought that was great. But
did you guys love this revenge from Arya? I got a text from one of my sisters. Just said, "Go, Arya." She loved it. Did you guys love this Arya Stark revenge?
It was awesome. I felt like they held on her a little too long.
She savored that pie.
Yeah, that's not like an actor problem. That's an editor just saying, "Okay, we're." On this for too long. It made it seem a little awkward to me.
Yeah, I was okay with it, but I do wonder if she learned how to do this, if she learned how to bake her revenge from our old pal Hot Pie.
Let's say it. This is all goodbye, the phrase, goodbye the twins. I don't think we'll see it again, but Arya still has those two people on her list. Is Arya going to go back north and join the Stark reunion tour at Winterfell, or next season, do you have her going to King's Landing to complete her list of killing Queen Cersei and the Mountain? Let's have a better call. I think she's going to King's Landing. I think we certainly need some more characters there since we had a... We had a clearing out.
I agree. I think she's going to King's Landing as well. I don't know whether this means that she thinks she's the only one who can do it. She still definitely knows who she is. She feels like she's a Stark. She's going to hear that Jon and Sansa have retaken over Winterfell. So it would make more sense for her to go to Winterfell. But I think for the drama of the story, she's not going to go to Winterfell. She's now a solo assassin. She works alone, and she's going to take care of her family business one pie at a time.
I disagree with you gorgeous, gorgeous hunks of men. I think she's going north. I think she needs some R&R. She wants to sleep in her own bed. She's got Needle with her. I think she's going to chill, and I think you know, she may take it upon herself to go do it, but she may have other people to kill more immediately. Maybe, maybe Littlefinger. Maybe, you know, who knows? Because I think Cersei is... Like, she has the throne, but at this point, she has no heirs. So what is what is it really worth?
Well, I don't know when we want to talk about it, but at some point, we do need to talk about the future for Cersei. So that's probably at the end of the podcast.
Very, very end. Okay. All right. So that's it for Arya. I just want to piggyback and say maybe as she's going to King's Landing, I think so many people have come back this season in season six. Is it possible? Dear Lord. We haven't seen Arya's direwolf since the second episode of season one. Is there a chance Nymeria comes back in season seven?
Hell yeah.
I think it's got to.
Yeah.
God, I thought you were going to say Gendry.
He's Rowan, baby.
I saw a great tweet by that actor, and he did.
Joe Dempsey.
The tweet was, still rowing.
Oh,
poor Joe.
Okay, it's...
He wants to come back.
It is time for another prize. Every time we end a storyline, it is time to get for a prize. So now we're going to give away one of our posters. This is one that features His Grace King Joffrey Baratheon.
Oh, boy.
We're going to kind of do a just kind of blind opening. We have many tubes, so Catfish, open up this poster of His Grace.
I saw these posters you were looking at, and I tried to contact these people.
Society 6. Yeah.
Society 6. No, let's not give them a plug because they didn't even reply to me.
All right, so Mork, pull that bowl over. This is one of Joffrey. He has a spilled wine goblet down on the floor next to him. And what does it say in the poster, Catfish? He says... I'm telling mom. Yes, it's. He says, I'm telling mom. So this Joffrey poster will go to the lucky double L whose name we're about to draw. And I have pulled one right here. And so this winner is going to be another winner from our Facebook page. Give it up to Brent Brooks. Brent Brooks.
Brent!
Double B.
Double B.
Brent, well done.
You have just won a Joffrey poster. Congratulations. Thank you guys so much. We've got a million prizes. We may have too many prizes to get to.
We've got so many prizes.
But here you go, Catfish. Throw that with his name.
All right. That makes sense.
All right.
That
so now sense. We're going to go to everybody's favorite storyline, Sam.
Oh,
now,
God.
Now, we have a hashtag here on Joffrey Podcast. It's called Skip Ahead. And that's when the scenes are maybe boring, or in the books, Martin is droning on about foods people are eating, or types of trees that are in the Stormlands, or names of bannermen and such. But sometimes people are tough on these Sam scenes. I have to be honest, he was only in three episodes of season six, and I think...
That's three more than he should have been in.
Hey, now, I actually think I liked all of them. I'm a bit shocked that we haven't seen Sam's father hunting down that famous Valyrian family sword.
Hey, what I want to know is, that seemed like a pretty big city there. They couldn't get a ride all the way to the city?
Right. This carriage ride, this guy on a wagon, he's like, no, I'm making a delivery. Nowhere, just kind of by Old Town, nowhere near.
Yeah, I totally agree with Holly Huntpants. It was definitely worth seeing the Citadel. Oh, for sure.
Because in this world... Even the books are macho. They got chains all over them.
They do.
So macho.
Well, that was what Cersei's dress was modeled on. Was a book.
Oh my God, even Samwell to see his costume in the light. I mean, he's kind of like it's like a little B&D he's ready for.
I've got another question from a non-book expert.
Let's hear it.
What at this point?
Yeah,
Bran is the three-eyed raven. Do we even call him Bran anymore? So Bran basically knows everything, and he learns something tonight. I didn't really get the significance of it, but he learned something tonight, some small fact. What is Sam for at this point? He's going to be reading, learning. What's he going to learn that Bran doesn't already know?
Well, we had this thing, Catfish, trying to break down, oh, who's going to fight what. And so I think Bran can maybe alert the North of this is how we do it. Sam, if you're in a big library like that, it's got to be that, hey, I'm going to learn something that will be helpful to this.
Yeah, but
we can't guess, and you guys are doing a terrible job guessing, but I think Sam is there to learn something.
Okay, well, he's there to learn something, but it doesn't
I think
seem
he's there to invent.
Shouldn't he at least at some point acknowledge that he's heard some information? Like
about the north of the wall?
There's so many things that have happened, and he doesn't seem to care. He's like, I get the library. I don't care what's happening to all them.
Right, yeah.
Well, I sound like Tommen.
No, I also thought it was a bit interesting where he goes up to this cranky librarian who, you know, was a funny little bit in an episode, light on levity, but heavy on death. But this person here at the Citadel is like, oh, you know what? We didn't know about Commander Mormont dying. We didn't know this. We didn't know that. And I'm thinking to myself, Sam, okay, the Maester Aemon at the wall did die. He was doing poorly.
Right.
But that means, Sam, you didn't write any letters and send out any letters?
Yeah.
Commander Mormont died back in season 3. You're telling me you never alerted the Citadel? You didn't alert the place where all the ravens
well,
come from?
He didn't want to seem presumptuous.
He spent all his raven money on pies.
Now, is it possible that, because it looks like that the actor playing Samwell has dropped a few LBs, is it possible that he's going to become a villain now that he's shed a couple of pounds? Is that
go deeper as to why you're saying that, Mork. Are you implying that villains are thin? That I don't understand that logic
at
all.
Santa Claus can never be a villain because he's so cuddly. So
he's
Samwell. So but the other thing here is also that child. Little Sam is not so little. Little Sam should be walking.
Well, Little Sam, he was born in season 3, too.
He's bigger than Gilly. Gilly, who, I think this is her first episode with a makeup artist. God bless her.
Oh, wait a minute. What about when she was at Horn Hill, the house, Tarly home?
She looked great there, but she looked too fancy. This is the way she looks the best. I think clean, but not too fancied up. She has a natural beauty to her. But what I want to say is there's a good – this shows why Samwell isn't really good with the ladies.
What do you mean?
Because basically the guy's like, okay, you can go in and get those books. And he's just like this, okay, books. And then he just leaves Gilly there, doesn't say I'll be back for you or go wait at an inn. He's like – later.
Go wait at an inn.
He forgot all about Gilly. He just forgot straight up about Gilly.
Oh, love that. Love that. T.C. Garment. All right, that's a good point. Pointing out that maybe he's learning how to make Valyrian steel. Genius.
Ooh, that'd be great.
Perfect.
That would be great, but
I'm in.
What do you also think about, have you ever, you know, this is a very open campus here at the Citadel where the Maesters are. Sam shows up. He's kind of got no proof. He says these things that the maester there, who keeps in charge of the books, apparently can't keep track of anything. And he's suddenly like, well, okay, you told me you're going to be a
grubby fingers all over the place.
It's like, yeah, you told me you're going to be a maester. Okay, go into our library and have fun.
Do your thing. You got a giant sword.
You want to check this guy's credentials?
Right. I think also he could be here to invent the important filmmaking genre of library porn.
You know, there's words that you're not supposed to say at an airport.
Yeah, let's hear.
You're not supposed to use the B word, bomb.
Okay.
I think that at this library the W word is not allowed.
W word.
Wildfire.
Okay.
Yeah, well, I'm assuming that's why there's no candles and it's all these amazing cool-ass mirrors that we see in the beginning of the show.
Yeah, this was some effects work. I'm not 100% sold on it, but it was cool to see. Sam, there are theoretically only 13 more episodes of the show. I know HBO is fighting that, trying to get the showrunners to have more episodes of the show. But, Sam, you don't have time in 13 episodes to read any of these books. You know, get the Cliff Notes version on this stuff.
You do, because he's single now. He's completely forgotten about Gilly and Little Sam.
Oh, man. Poor Gilly.
You guys go wherever. What? Who?
Gilly will be just fine. I believe in Gilly.
Okay.
Do we want to call him, instead of Little Sam, call him Triple S?
Triple S?
Slightly smaller Sam. He's grown.
Just slightly.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're done with the Sam storyline. It's time for another prize.
What?
Catfish, what are we going to be giving away now?
Well, just to switch things up.
Yeah.
Are we giving these away?
Those will just go.
All right. What we're giving away now is, one of these for myself. It's a little figurine that you put together, and the pieces are super, super tiny. It could be anybody in here. You put it together. I ended up getting a Jon Snow one, but I kept losing his head, so it was headless Jon Snow.
Uh-oh.
So for this...
Foreshadowing.
This little figure is going to be... at Charlotte Robert 4
on Twitter.
Charlotte, Robert 4.
Thank you.
This is yours.
Just
all yours.
Go to our Facebook page, leave us a message of your mailing address, or write to me, Fitton, FITTENTRIM, Fitton at prodigy.net.
If you don't, we'll give it to Charlotte Grobert 3. So please get on this right away.
So we've been talking about where storylines are kind of ending. We talked about the King's Landing storyline. I loved how that ended. We talked about the twins, and it's totally over, but Arya's storyline, where that could go. And now Sam's storyline, this is maybe the only one in the episode where it doesn't leave me, ooh, I really want to see what happens next.
Right.
But for this cute couple, it's nice to see some people are not completely miserable. So I'll give it up to Sam and Gilly.
Oh, I thought you meant Sam and the library.
That's also a cute couple.
It was nice, but we could have waited till, you know, next season to see it.
Well, we didn't see Sir Jorah, Sir Friendzone, Sir Friendstone. We haven't seen him. And I predicted we might not see him when we last saw him in episode 6.
Or he'll show up at...
Or just, actually, just that might have been episode... Excuse me. That might have been episode 5. No, it was... Or episode 4. I don't know. And then we also didn't see... And this is somebody I really predicted. I thought we'd see Uncle Euron Greyjoy, but we didn't see him either. He's too busy building ships.
Yeah, he's still chopping down trees. He only has, I think at this count, based on how quickly people move in this show, 894 ships to build. So I think
the other thing that was
almost done.
The other thing that we didn't see that you and I both thought that we would see, I would have bet a lot of money that the last scene we would have seen would have been the White Walkers massing north of the Wall.
They took the episode off.
Because the whole point of this show, and again, part of my frustration with the books is that they seem to forget about the threat of the White Walkers and we get involved in other stuff. And I think the show does a better job at reminding us that the White Walkers are always out there. And yet they drop the ball here. I mean, this is... We're trying to keep on trying to convince people the White Walkers are a big threat. We should be ever present. They should be ever present.
It's a great point, and I could be wrong, but the fact that, you know, Jon Snow is now in charge. Basically, yeah. He's now in charge. Or what we're about to see up in Winterfell, and he still hasn't pulled the guys aside, the Lords of the North. Said, "All right, this is what I saw." Not just rumors, not just Winter's Coming, but this...
He implied it, I thought.
He'd implied it, but...
I mean, look, if I went through Hardhome, I would do more than imply. You know, like, I think it's... You have to be a little bit more direct about, you know...
Yeah, he makes... He doesn't just make an appeal. It's more like a little Liliana, our Triple L. She makes the point, it's not about the White Walkers.
Right.
It's about fealty to the King in the North, as it's always been.
Yeah.
So that's an interesting point. Again, we talked about it last week, that for some crazy reason, there's such fealty to people that Edmure could be captured for years, and the first time they see him, he gets them to agree...
To open the drawbridge
and surrender.
And stand down, yeah. I want to say that I was just talking about the effects shot on the library, which I thought was okay, not great. I love that shot of, I assume, the White Raven delivering the message, winter has come.
Finally.
So it's been 10 episodes since the evil burning of Shireen, where Stannis and his wife, Selyse, burn their daughter, Shireen, based on the recommendation of Melisandre, and that chicken has finally come home to roost. What did you guys think? I actually thought this scene was pretty weak, of Davos snapping at Melisandre, and I understand that he needs almost John's approval now. Somehow he was a foot soldier to Stannis, now he's a foot soldier to John. But this was one scene that maybe went down.
I wouldn't say he's a foot soldier. I'd say it feels like he's part of his, I don't want to call it
the small council.
Yeah, the small council that Sir Davos, Sir Knuckles, and the Wyndham Wizard. Tormund are part of his advisory council, his war council.
I kind of thought John might forgive her. She brings up some good points. She's like, you know, yeah, you're attacking me, but the Shireen's own father and mother did it.
I didn't like the middle way here, and this is one of the reasons why I kind of brought this down a little bit, because what it sets up is the same thing that happened with Sir Friendzone, where somebody gets banished, and they're like, okay, I'm going to work because I believe in them, and then they'll come back.
I thought
so.
Was,
I thought he should have decided.
I think he should have killed her based
either
on
no either. She did something bad, but she's part of us, and so we have to all suck it up because we got worse things to fight. Or, just like his supposed father.
Well, but John. So Jon Snow is not only the king of the North; he's also, we've seen, the king of not great decisions. And this was a not great decision that I would have liked to see him make. And you know, and he should have killed her.
He got drawn into
the battle where a lot of his guys died. You know, because of Rickon. Okay, fine. He's done a bunch of things where he just kind of did them because he felt it was the right thing to do. So this is I think a pretty safe gut move of all the gut moves is kill the person who burned the little girl.
I don't know. Can I argue the other side if that's okay?
Go ahead.
First off, some people in Periscope are making great points about, well, if Melisandre goes the way you assume she might go, she might head south and run into some other character we didn't see this episode, the Hound with the Brotherhood Without Banners, who implied they were coming north, and of course she met them. I always mention that back in season 3, Melisandre had that scene with Arya where she said, we will meet again. So because they didn't kill her, Arya and Melisandre can meet again. And I would say that the ignorance, I think, of sending her away and or killing her is that Jon has seen, you just went on a rant, Mork, about how Jon has seen the Night's King. He knows there's this otherworldly, this magical force out there. I think you need everything you can, even if, okay, she doesn't have the best track record, but neither does Jon Snow. Neither does Davos. None of these people have great track records. Get rid of somebody who could help you fight the White Walkers? Okay, it doesn't make any sense.
But here's the thing, is that my problem was he took the middle way. I could agree with you if he said she's too important to us.
Right.
But it's one thing or the other. Either he needs her to fight the White Walkers, and he needs to have her with him, or she did something so wrong that she needs to be put to death. He chooses the middle way, which satisfies neither one of those things.
Okay.
Again, I had talked about how I felt like Sansa came into her own, Arya came into her own. I don't feel like, and maybe we saw it just a touch at the end, but I still didn't feel it, that Jon is coming to his own, even when they... I mean, it was confusing for him because he had given his allegiance to Sansa, so I feel like that sets up a conflict he's been called King of the North, and Sansa's maybe feeling a little less powerless, even though she was the one pushing him.
Right.
So Baelish is going to try to cause trouble there, but I still feel like the problem is he hasn't come into his own, and part of where we see that is him taking the middle way that doesn't help him. He doesn't make a decision. Sending her away is not a decision. In other words, you did something bad, so rather than me either forgiving you for it or making you pay for it, if you go away, I won't have to think about it.
Yeah.
So I just felt like for his character, it shows him still not coming into his own.
All right, well, we see Melisandre riding away into that snow as winter has arrived, and we get the scene that I think a lot of people wanted after last week's episode, the scene between Jon and Sansa, these half-siblings, we thought, where Sansa comes clean and says why she didn't tell him about the army.
And it still doesn't make sense.
Well, many people were frustrated that she didn't tell him last week. Many people thought that it was a insult to Sansa's character.
After watching the episode 9 again, there were two things we talked about in the podcast that I had more of a problem with. One is Sansa not saying anything, and two is 1-1 being severely underpowered.
Without a weapon.
All right,
grabbing a person, instead of splitting him in half, using him to swing. Both of those things were more troubling from a plot standpoint.
I 100% agree with you on 1-1. I disagree with Sansa because this is Littlefinger that we're talking about, and she could ask, but when did she really know that he was going
to
show up?
It doesn't matter whether she knows or not. She could say to Jon, I sent for Littlefinger's troops. I don't know if he's going to come or not, but we can wait. Or we can not wait, but I sent for them.
Right.
He kept saying to her over and over again,
We can't wait.
We don't have enough troops. We don't have enough troops. And so the answer to that is not to hide the fact that you've tried to get more troops.
He was also telling her that we can't wait and we have to do this now. And we had this makes, is the Donald Rumsfeld
we
line.
We can't wait.
This is the army that
but
we
he was
have.
Saying we can't wait because exactly because this is the army we have because they went and tried to get as many as they could and they had no more. If she tells them, yes, we can wait because if we wait, we'll get more troops. That makes no sense, and they kind of try to play it off here. I don't think successfully.
Well,
in that scene,
well,
in the scene between
John
her and
Snow, John Snow doesn't seem angry about this at all.
Yeah, he's
giving
still a wimp.
Well, he's giving her her mother in her father's room. He's like, "You're the Lord. I'm a Snow." He says, "You won the battle. If you hadn't called for those troops," but then he has a very interesting line, and I said it while we were watching it. Is he's like, "Sansa, you told me that Littlefinger Peter Baelish sold you to the Boltons, and you trust him?" And she goes, "Only a fool would trust Littlefinger."
That's great.
And I thought she's insulting her father.
But I will say this. So there's three things that Jon Snow does tonight that I don't like.
Let's hear it.
One is the non-decision with Melisandre.
Right.
Two, also he's not upset at all that she didn't tell him.
Right.
Number three is that he tells the one of the guys who didn't come to his aid, "You have nothing to be forgiven for." That's not right.
That's
not right. You don't have to berate him or kill him, but you don't say you need no forgiveness.
Yeah.
That's spitting in the face of the people who did come to your side.
Right. It should be something along the lines of, well, you have a chance to prove yourself now.
Exactly.
I think what I would say, I mean, I obviously disagree about, I mean, Sansa, she didn't really know when the guys were showing up and all that. So maybe that's why she didn't tell. Maybe
right. You can still tell. You can still say it.
Some people.
The only reason to do it is so that we could have the Deus Ex Machina, because if she tells him to wait, he'll wait, and then we don't have them coming to save the day. That's the only, you know, that's the only reason to do it. And so it doesn't. So that's why they did it.
I think some people consider that bad writing. We had somebody in the past call it bad writing.
I think to trust Baelish, that Baelish is going to come help you after you've basically told him to fuck off when they last saw each other, then...
It's not about trusting Baelish. It's about telling your brother what you've done.
Okay.
Her half brother, you know, like she's. I look. Let's. We can agree or disagree on that. I think with. And maybe this is to the larger point about is there going to be a conflict between John and Sansa? I don't think there is. I think he wants her to be there. He wants her to be at Winterfell. He knows there's going to be a bigger fight coming, and he's going to have to go do it.
Well, it's interesting that he doesn't do what Reek did when they met with Daenerys. He doesn't say.
Sure.
No, it's not me. I'm not the guy. But I still agree with Mork. I would be troubled knowing how much she doesn't trust Baelish and the conversation they have here and how much John has, not tried to be overbearing. I would be troubled. I think they would have a hard time getting me to believe a manufactured disagreement between the two of them.
Oh, I respectfully... Disrespectfully, disagree. I think there's trouble coming between Jon and Sansa. I do want to talk about this scene of them up here on the battlements.
Up on the roof.
Right, between Jon and Sansa.
When they make out?
He kisses her forehead. That is, that's as far as you've gotten, Catfish. I know why you call that
making
out.
That's same. Well, we all have different versions of what making out is.
That is true.
So
I hate you, Catfish.
So one of the things that it was actually in the preview for this episode, John tells her, we've got to trust each other. We have so many enemies now. And I was thinking to myself, who are their enemies again? I know the evil enemy north of the wall, but I don't think Cersei
or
anybody.
The Lannisters are still after them. They've got to feel like the Lannisters are still after them.
That's true.
Come on. Lannisters are the phrase with the Red Wedding. They got to still feel like those people are going to be upset at them taking Winterfell back.
Okay, they may feel that way. Pretty soon they're going to find out no phrase. Mm-hmm. the phrase are in disarray. Disarray.
Right, but the Lannisters... Took over.
That's true. Well, in other words, Cersei's going to have a question next year. Is it, do I attack south to the Sand Snakes and Dorne, who killed my daughter, or do I trek north and go after Sansa, the woman I believe is involved in my son's
I think Cersei.
Birth.
Cersei's not going to worry. The battle will come to Cersei. She won't have to go anywhere. But I think to something. I think I will also disrespectfully disagree with you.
All right.
Completely wrong. They're not going to be going at it because the only way they can really they would really start to dislike each other enough to go to war and kill each other is if they let Baelish in. And Sansa's done with that. Like if she lets Baelish in again, literally or figuratively.
After I mean basically
point,
he sold her to Ramsay.
He sold her to Ramsay.
She is smart now. She's coming to her own. She's not going to like let anybody make a fool of her. And I don't.
Not only that, but what Baelish is kind of done at this point. Like,
no, I disagree with that.
I disagree. I think we got plenty more.
We need another big bad, and that's going to be big bad Baelish, triple B.
Oh, I was going to. What I like to refer to as double B is Baelish business. I think we got a lot of Baelish business.
Oh, maybe. Absolutely. He's
maybe,
not out.
If you were Sansa, or if you were Jon Snow. And this guy sold your half-sister, so you think, to Ramsay Bolton.
Yeah, you'd want to kill him.
Why would you be afraid of killing him?
For me to buy and not be disappointed by a rift between Sansa and Jon, that would have to be double D.
Double D.
Deftly done.
I think they're setting the seeds for that. They're at double S.
Double S.
Seed setting right now in this final scene. I do want to say it's easy to kind of overlook it because there was so much in this longest episode ever, but I did love when Sansa and Jon had that smile about winter is here. Dad was right.
Finally.
Finally, he said something that can't be refuted.
All right, so let's get back to Winterfell, and we see Littlefinger trying his move. You know, when you're trying for those younger girls at his age, I've heard it's tough.
No.
So what did you guys think of Littlefinger's play and his play? His, dare I say, his foreplay is a pitch of, I want to be on the Iron Throne and I want you right there with me. Is that something that Sansa would be interested in?
I think, and we've talked about this over and over again, about how important it is, your family name,
right,
et cetera.
Okay.
I think irrespective of what Baelish has put Sansa through personally, as someone who is a member of the Stark family or any of the major families, you have to be shocked that this upstart would even suggest that they would be the king and you would be by their side. No, he is just a jumped-up hula master, and regardless of her personal feelings,
it's just not right.
He's shooting way above his weight, both with her hand and with the throne.
So why doesn't anyone kill him at this point? Like, what does he have? That
he did just save you. You know, if you're not going to kill Melisandre, who brought you back to life,
right?
The army that he kind of is controlling, because he controls Little Robin Arryn. He did just save you. So then kill him? That seems like an odd.
Save you after he sold you into.
Why didn't he do the middle way like he did with Melisandre and say you're get out, you're done?
Well, the thing I would say is what most people don't know in the show that we know as watchers is how truly devious he is. Now, he's just finally exposed what he wants to Sansa, and I was surprised. I thought he was going to say, I've always wanted you. Instead, he's like, yes, I want you by my side because I will be king. Now, this is a little dangerous, though, for him to say. So,
yeah, that he's declared
time that he
for
has,
House Stark?
He has, no, that he has openly expressed to anybody, I want it all. So now he's put himself in potential danger here. I don't know. He just must think he has a great line, because after what he did, to think that he's going to get her back and on his side to take over, to sit on the Iron Throne, that is ballsy.
Well, he doesn't have the Lannisters anymore. He's never going to get the Starks.
Yeah, but he's
he does have the Vale, but the Vale is. You know, like you're not gonna you're not going to take over the Veil, but they're also not.
He's essentially running the Veil. You don't understand. He has got the Veil and all the soldiers behind him.
Right.
They're the ones who saved the day. After we saw the bloodbath that happened, I presume even now that the rest of the families in the north have come around and have been just immediately forgiven, or not even necessarily, didn't even need to be forgiven, according to Mopey Moperson, Jon Snow, they're still a formidable opponent.
I'm not saying he doesn't have some troops, but I think what's made him such a great character and such a great, you know, the closest thing that there is to a pure villain on the show.
How dare you?
Yeah, Cersei's upset.
Cersei's upset. Ramsay's rolling in his dog's stomach. But, you know, the thing with him is there was always the threat of, okay, what move would he be able to, you know, who would he be able to align with down the road? Who is he talking to that you don't know about that'll come back and bite you in the ass? And at this point, he's kind of run out of other people to go to. Like, he's gone through his dance with the Lannisters. He's gone through his dance, you know, with I mean, the Aarons and also with the Starks a little bit. So it's sort of like, who does he have? Is it Dany?
Well, that is true. The other thing I would say is, for sort of a long play that might have to play out, and we talked about this earlier, is that to bypass Baelish, that Sansa might have to puppet little Robin Aaron herself and make some sort of alliance with him. The one thing I want to say here that has absolutely nothing to do with anything else, of all the crazy wigs that people have worn on this show,
yeah,
no hair has looked faker to me than Baelish's, I think, real hair in this scene.
It's colored, but yeah.
It's colored, but it looks like a mop head.
I think it's beautiful.
Well,
I mean, I don't have much, so look, I would take it. That's all I'll say. I'll take it.
So, once again, Littlefinger is double-essing. He's
double-essing?
He's sowing seeds. He's saying,
okay,
you know, you are the future of House Stark. You are the true-born daughter of Ned and Catelyn Stark. They're going to follow you, a daughter of the North, as opposed to some bastard born in the South. And so he's trying to whittle his way in here. And I think this does set up some drama for next season. I really think so.
It will have to be very well done. I mean,
for you, so everybody remember this, and we'll call on Catfish next year.
Well, that's fine, but the way this is going to work is if John somehow grows a pair, and he's never shown himself to be overbearing, much less, I mean, even showing control or power.
Okay. Well, let's get to the final scene in Winterfell. Of course, it's a smash cut from a young baby John to John in front of everybody. We see Sir Royce, Lord Royce from the Vale. He brought his armies up there, and he's, you know, arguing about, hey, who am I supposed to follow? I'm not from the North. I'm not going to fight with these free folk, these wildlings. That's ridiculous that we would fight amongst these savages.
First, we don't want to talk about the thing that we've expected for years and years and
years. Let's talk about that grand story, if that's okay. And so we have this room of people who are just kind of bickering, for lack of a better word, and it's up to Triple E, Little Lady Lyanna, to talk some smack sense
Triple
into
E.
these people.
She has stolen two episodes.
She's great
with speeches.
Right.
She's stolen two episodes.
Well, this is very much. This was when it was a few episodes ago. Sansa. There's nothing cooler on this show when Catelyn Stark did it in way back in season one to arrest Tyrion, where she calls the guys to arms, where she calls them out on their honor. And Sansa didn't do it, but Little Lady Lyanna stepped up, and she was amazing.
She essentially called them out for not having any nuts at all.
Yeah. I have an excuse.
I don't think she has any personal knowledge of what men's bodies have, but essentially she said, whatever you have down there,
it's
missing.
She gave him the hand like she did her...
Sansa studied Little Lady Lyanna Mormont, because when Littlefinger went in for a smooch, she gave him the hand. Yeah. Is the new, you know,
the hand
means
the new,
no.
Yeah, the hand is the
hand
new
means no. No means no. No means hand.
Who
hand
is,
means no.
Who is tougher? Triple L or Brienne of Tarth?
Oh, man. Ooh, we didn't see Brienne in this episode either.
Oh.
But I think we got to give it up to Little Ellie.
I would take Little Ellie in a minute. I think Brienne would be fine.
I would take her over Daenerys.
Whoa.
Not Daenerys plus the dragons.
Oh, okay.
But just Daenerys herself.
Well, no, that's not fair because she's taller than Daenerys.
She is taller than Daenerys. But then again, Tyrion's almost taller than Daenerys.
Hey, no.
God bless him. This was fun.
One thing that was running through my mind during this scene is that, sure enough, this being crowned King of the North, being proclaimed King of the North, didn't work out for Rob too well. But if you remember the end of season one where everybody was cheering Rob, the king in the north, that was an uplifting moment. And a couple of seasons later, Rob got. And so do you think, admittedly, John wasn't there, Sansa wasn't there, but you wonder if John's like, that's okay, that's fine.
It's okay.
You know what?
I'm good, guys.
But let's talk about this world. I mean, it doesn't matter whether you're called King of the North or the guy who makes the best pies. You know what? You don't want to be called at all. You don't want anyone to notice you.
Right.
And then even then you could be in trouble because you'd be walking down the street and you could get brained with a bell. So basically,
maybe,
it doesn't matter. Get brained right with a bell.
I was a little disappointed that there wasn't someone screaming in the background, shame! No, this was cool.
Everybody fell in line. The Manderleys, who they had mentioned all season long, finally showed up and said, okay, yeah, we were punks. We didn't show up. The Glover man, who you love from that horror movie, Catfish.
Severance, he
came back and he said, okay, I didn't answer the call. I'm a douche. But I get it now. I'm going to bend the knee. Let's do this. But
if I was John, I'd say, I forgive you. Well, I actually don't need to forgive you. But next fight, y'all in front.
Yeah, you guys are in the front, and I'm also going to command only your troops. I won't command my own because I'm not that good at that. But I'll practice with yours. I
gotta say it, guys. Look at this look between evil Littlefinger and Sansa.
That
Littlefinger keeps trying to plant the seed.
But Sansa has never been someone like she's not Cersei yet. And I wish she would become Cersei, but she's not Cersei yet. And she is not interested at all. She's interested in being safe and her family, in being in Winterfell. But whether or not she's the queen, that's never been something that's really motivated her, personally. So
now, I know that we are not going to talk about this yet, but we just got my favorite comment of all time, I think, on the Periscope.
Let's hear it.
Our buddy BTMac11, who says, great job, North. You just pledge allegiance to a Targaryen.
Uh-oh.
I have no idea what that means.
And you watch the episodes. That's good.
Amazing. Idea what that means. That's great. Yes, I just don't think that he's going to be able to seduce her at all. I mean, what's he going to offer her? So I don't think she really wants to be the queen. She wants to be safe and protected and feel...
I think we'll have enough going on and... I do believe that Baelish is going to cause a lot of trouble. I don't think the trouble is going to be between Jon and Sansa. So that's our wager for
next
year.
All right, that's everybody remember, write us on Facebook, facebook.com/DoublePodcast, or tweet out hashtag Joffrey Podcast. We want to hear from you. So let's leave.
The North remembers.
Let's leave.
But a lot of times I don't.
that should be the hashtag. That was really good, Catfish. Sorry I interrupted you there, but I thought we'd go to the place you always say is the great summer vacation place. Let's
wait, hold on. We're done with the storyline, are we not?
We're done with the storyline. It's time for prizes.
All right, let's give it away.
All right, so Catfish, what's next in the prize bonanza?
Well, basically, we're going to start doing some repeats. We've got some other big stuff. I want to save some stuff, big stuff to the end. So let's do another Wyndham Wizard package.
All right.
The beard.
All right, let's do it.
The eye thing and the t-shirt.
All right, so you're getting the sleep mask with Tormund's eyes on it. You are getting a fake beard as if you're Tormund, and you are going to be getting a t-shirt which lets you measure your beard. This is from our friends at Wyndham Hotels, Wyndham Resorts, who gave us these prizes.
Oh, I thought you were saying they're the one-to-one. I thought that would be ironic.
So the winner of this prize, everybody get ready, it's another Facebook entry. It's Ralph Sordilio. Ralph Sordilio, you have just won a Wyndham Wizard Prize. Yeah. Congratulations. Heck yeah. Great job. We're doing great with prizes. If your name hasn't been called yet, know that we're giving away the bigger prizes at the end. We're making you listen to possibly...
And we have so many prizes.
Possibly the longest Joffrey podcast ever.
In honor of His Grace King Joffrey.
Exactly right. So let's talk about it. As we wrapped up Winterfell, at least. Are you guys excited for Winterfell next season? I am. Yes or no? Round robin. Let's just go quick time. Excited for Winterfell, Catfish?
Absolutely, yes.
Mork? Super.
Sure.
All right, let's do it. Let's go to that summer vacation. Let's go down to Dorne. And this is one that, sure enough, we predicted a couple of episodes ago when people were like, where did Varys go? So we got down here, and we did have some great dialogue.
Oh, my God.
Who knew that all that Dorne and the Sand Snakes needed was Lady Olenna.
Lady Olenna, in the space of like 20 words, delivers 3 bitch slaps.
Yeah. That's all she needs. She's done this before. She looks great in black. She doesn't seem to be too upset, though, about
right. You wonder about the time. Right. Well, it's her son. Her son who was
well,
there.
She never liked the son. That we know. That we knew.
But she is in black. She is in mourning. And you're right. She even when theoretically she's pissed, she's quippy.
Yeah.
She's pulling out zingers. She's the Zingbot 2000 of Westeros.
She is, and she's already gotten the word. And that's why she's down here in Double D.
Double D.
Delightful Dorne.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's beautiful. There's actually a few Wyndham hotels in Dorne. A lot of people don't know about them.
They haven't paid.
Perfect.
They gave us these prizes, but they haven't paid anything. We don't want to mention them too much. I'll have to edit some of these out.
Fair enough.
So what did you guys think? Are you excited now that Varys, the Sand Snakes, and their mother... The House Tyrell are now all one big fighting force. What do you think about this scene?
I dig that. What I don't love about the scene,
yeah.
and it's the Sand Snakes, right? These are the Sand Snakes.
Are indeed.
Okay. So I get them and the Second Sons confused because they share one letter. Anyway,
okay.
So the idea that, and this is the same thing with Arya that I'm not wild about. The idea that in this gigantic clash, all these amazing battles that, you know, three people here, one person there, with their individual fighting skills is going to matter. Like Jaime, you first meet Jaime, and the whole first season, Jaime and Ned are going to fight. They're great warriors, blah, 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 blah. And then the greatest thing happens to Jaime where, you know, he's one of the greatest living warriors, and oops, you know, he loses his hand. And so it's not about, it's never been about one individual warrior. You saw when the Mountain and what's Ilya, Oberyn Martell, thank you.
Right.
You know, they went at it. So these are both great individual warriors. And then, you know, one guy gets crushed. The mountain is back. And so I just don't think we need the Sand Snakes in this scene. That's all.
I, once again, disrespectfully disagree. I think...
More disrespectfully, please.
What maybe the show isn't pitching to you, Mork, that maybe you're not picking up on, is, yes, these three young Sand Snakes are fighters and stuff, but what they're really bringing, and because you've never seen them, it's easy to forget, they're bringing the boats and the power of Dorne. In fact, in the final scene of Daenerys on those boats, some of those boats have the House Martell sail.
See,
yeah,
and for
great.
Me...
I have no problem with that.
My issue was now it feels like the Lannister opposition
is too
overpowered. And I assume for some reason, just because they're the bad guys, that Daenerys is going to go after the Lannisters first because that's King's Landing and that's where she wants to take.
Okay.
You know, now, if they mistakenly dock a little bit more north, they could end up taking on Jon Snow and killing all his troops. Now, that is not going to happen, as we all know. But it seems like if we have, you know, the Tyrells and their army show up with the Sand Snakes and their army, and then we have Daenerys and her army. I mean, it's been a while since I saw more than... 10 soldiers for the Lannisters. It seems like
they had them all.
The Lannister opposition is extremely overpowered at this point to me.
So
maybe Cersei tries her trick with the Wildfire part 2. We have seen the throne room destroyed in visions from Daenerys in the House of the Undying in season 2 and Bran when he touched a weirwood in season 4. So maybe you know, there's
what if Dany goes to the Riverlands instead?
Right. She's like, I heard there was a lone wolf around here somewhere. Yeah. And Arya, but I mean Nymeria.
Okay, so let's say the Dorns help overthrow the Lannisters, then is there's a fight between the Dornians and Daenerys and the Dothraki? That's a lot of D's, by the way. Or do they all get together and then fight the real problem, which is the White Walkers, once they come past the Wall? And as we said last week, the White Walkers thrive in the winter, but we know the winter is sweeping down. People haven't talked about it a lot.
Right.
That's only I know from the books. If I just been watching the show, I wouldn't think, oh my goodness, when winter comes, it's going to sweep its way all the way down to King's Landing. But that is indeed what should be happening with the winter. It will sweep down everywhere, and the only place that'll be warm is America's vacation spot, Dorne. But will the Dornians care about
the Dornish?
The Dornish, would they care about the White Walkers, or do they just want to take care of the Lannisters?
I think they would be like Sam's. Remember how Sam's brother laughed when Gilly said, oh, Sam killed a White Walker? He went, that's their legend, that's myth. I think everybody, to be honest, thinks that.
Yeah. Well, but the question is, what is the Sand Snakes? What is their final... What do they want to accomplish? Do they just want to kill the Lannisters?
That's what it feels like.
Would they want to take over King's Landing?
No. I don't think they do. I think no. But, yeah, she killed her brother or her ex-brother-in-law because he kept getting rolled over. And so she was just done with that. And that's, you know, that was Dorne Brexited.
This is a Dorne
Brexit.
It was
a Brexit.
That's really good. I'm going to give a small shame bell for a TV show watcher only, Mork, in that Alaria Sand, who's the kind of the older woman here, she wasn't married to Oberyn. So, yeah, it was. She didn't kill her quote-unquote brother-in-law.
Oh.
Like, almost brother-in-law. So that relationship is similar to a brother-in-law, sister-in-law.
Common law.
But because she was a bastard, technically, she couldn't marry him. So.
Oh.
Right.
All right, that's the end of Dorne. Does anybody want to say anything else about these triple S's, sexy sand snakes? Or are we ready to give away another prize?
I do like it when they kind of get... I find it's sexy when they get sort of saucily smacked down.
But nothing is sexier than Grandma Tyrell. You're right.
If you watch her back in the day, that is absolutely true.
Do you think?
Oh, yeah, back on the
point,
TV show, The Avengers.
Do you think at any point she's going to strap on the necklace that Melisandre has?
Who would you rather? What is your thought process?
Would you rather, Melisandre without the necklace, or the Queen of Thorns
with the necklace, or without the
without?
Necklace?
No, neither of them has a necklace.
Oof. Oh boy. I've been lonely recently.
It depends. It's just like,
I'll take
Lady. I'm afraid that Lady Liana might find my performance lacking.
Wait, dear Lord, not Lady Liana.
Lady Olenna.
Yeah, dear Lord, that's
Lady Olenna.
Yes.
That gets us. Yeah, we're gonna edit that out. Oh my
Sorry.
God.
No, that Lady Olenna might say something about my performance, and I would never have any confidence ever again.
Okay, so it's
that
time.
Might be a good thing.
It's time to give away. We're done with Dorne, so it's time to give away another one of these small Game of Thrones figures. It could be anybody. It could be evil Uncle Tyrion, Daenerys. It is a mystery. You're going to get it. If we call your name, you just need to get us your mailing address via Facebook or email me, Bubba at Fitten, FITTEN, at prodigy.net. Let's hear it, Mork. What do you got?
Oh, boy. This is via Facebook, Mark Walk Walker.
Oh, I think that's Dooley's left leg, I think.
Oh,
get
I think
here.
It is.
Oh, but he's sleeping.
He's sleeping, so.
No, he went to sleep already?
Yeah, sorry.
Oh, DLL, you're not on the program? You're not listening anymore? Oh, well.
Would have been worth staying up for.
Nice little, I hope you have like a magnifying glass or something to put these together and maybe some glue to keep it together, but this is a fun little thing.
Congratulations.
Congratulations.
You're just another lucky winner here on the Joffria podcast. Okay, so are you ready to go east, and I mean far east, to the city of Meereen? Are you ready, Mork?
Yeah, sure. I love Meereen this time of year.
Ooh, let me tell you, I have been tough on Meereen almost as soon as it got introduced to the show, and I've been really tough this year. I loved last week's Battle of Marine, the Battle of Fire, while we had the Battle of Snow there, the Battle of Winterfell.
Do you think they should have just taken a year off from Marine?
Oh, boy. I don't think this was the strongest Marine's ever been. In that, this goodbye Dario scene, this, hey, it's not you, but it's you. You're a sellsword, so you can't be my consort. It didn't thrill me.
Well,
I liked, I guess, the Daenerys Tyrion scene, but I thought leaving behind a bunch of sellswords, including one. Let's remember, we met Dario when he cut off the heads of his commanders, leaving him in charge. Why not? I always thought that it would make more sense to leave somebody from there, somebody who spoke the language, and maybe Dario does speak this Valyrian tongue. Why not leave Missandei and Grey Worm there?
Oh, because they got to get on the boat. We got to see them. They got to get on the boat.
Or is this just, man, I met this sexy Yara Greyjoy. How can I dump Dario?
That is probably it. I hope. Yeah. But if that was true, then she'd leave behind, from what we know, she'd leave behind some of her friends, so she could spend a little more time with Yara. But
they're part of her council. They're people that she trusts. I don't think she could leave them behind. Besides, she's bringing her troops, not just the Dothraki.
Right.
And Grey Worm is in charge of those guys. I mean, we assume, technically.
Of the Unsullied.
Yeah.
Now, does Dario...
And Missandei is in charge of your heart. She owns
all of our hearts.
So,
Dario... Does Dario... Does he have an equally... Who had a better goodbye? Dario or Hot Pie? who's had better goodbyes than Dario and Hot Pie? Anybody?
I thought Dario's didn't hit me emotionally, maybe because I've never really cared about this character, and their romance hasn't felt especially romantic.
It hasn't. And recently, it sort
Mother
of started
Dragon
off, and it
needs.
Felt that way.
Mother Dragon has needs, guys.
I know, but we spent most of our time of her not learning her lesson over and over again, instead of how to rule, instead of sort of her personal life.
Right.
I don't know whether I would care anymore. But at least we could have seen something, how he was important to her. So him getting her dropped off, her kicking him to the curb, didn't mean anything because we didn't see their relationship.
One thing that when she's talking to Tyrion and she's like, I just said goodbye to someone who said they love me and I care deeply about and I feel nothing. I thought somebody was going to say, Jorah? No. You meant Dario.
Peace out, SFZ, so friend zone.
And our wonderful double.
Dario, by the way, Dario knows who stabbed him in the back.
Who?
Tyrion.
Evil Uncle Tyrion. Right.
He's like,
get rid of competition.
Little bastard.
But, Catfish, our true double L, our original double L, Holly Hunt Pants on Periscope is asking, Jorah? So, we're obviously... Let's be honest. We've got to see Jorah again, but where? How will he come back into the story?
I think he's gonna meet up with Melisandre.
Oh, she could cure him. That'd be great.
Wouldn't that be nice?
Could you put him on the wall and just and replace that giant scythe that swings back and forth on the wall with Jorah?
Stony Jorah. Swings.
Oh. That's what 1-1 needed. 1-1 needed Stony Jorah to use as a club. and then we wouldn't need the veil, and then we could really kill Baelish.
All right, I got a question for you. Are we going to see Dario? Dario 2.0, are we ever going to see him again?
No. We don't need him.
Catfish?
I don't think so. We've spent so much time in Marine with her learning how to role people. The only reason we'd see him is if things were going bad in Marine again, and that would feel horrible. We have to assume things are going to go swimmingly in Marine.
The only way I want to see him is if he hooks up with Ilaria Sands. That's the only way. They would be a good couple. I'd like to go to that wedding.
I could see it. So now we have a scene where Daenerys... Knights / names Evil Uncle Tyrion as her Hand of the Queen. What did you think about this scene, Catfish?
I liked it because this only adds to what we were just complaining about with Dario, where we didn't see enough scenes of them together.
Right.
This is a scene that I feel like we need because I haven't really felt like that she's leaning on Tyrion, that she trusts Tyrion, that Tyrion's become a trusted advisor. So even though this is kind of a shortcut a little bit, she is rewarding him for making the decision that I all along knew was right and you doubted its rightness. So, you know, I do remember that I was right about Tyrion's plan for saving Meereen did work out in the end, just as he planned.
Oh, brother.
Even though you were still denying it, Bubba.
Oh, brother. Well,
so we needed this scene. So we needed this scene for her to know that she really trusts Tyrion.
Okay.
Yeah, I enjoyed the scene, but I feel like we'd seen a bit of this already. We'd sort of heard that speech from Tyrion about believing in something again. You know, when he shared it with either Jorah or what's his name, the old dude, the you know.
Well, Tyrion never met Ser Barristan, who died.
Not Ser Barristan. Okay, so but he shared it with Jorah that right. Now I believe again. So,
but this scene was less about him and more about her, I thought. Or them together, their relationship together.
So, does this make you excited? Daenerys, who for so long, since the entire run of this series, has in many ways been off on her own island. I mean, she's on the continent of Essos, but she's been off on her own island. And people always thought, well, she'll come to Westeros. She'll come to Westeros. And that didn't happen. Instead, people like Ser Barristan, like Tyrion, like the Greyjoys, started going to her.
Westeros came to her.
Right, Westeros came to her. Yeah. Yeah, that'd be a good campaign slogan.
Sure.
I think this is great because we saw when Tyrion was the Hand of the King at King's Landing how good he is at strategery and planning, and he's well aware of tricks that people could make. So I think he makes an excellent advisor.
He is an excellent advisor, but my concern for him, just from a viewer standpoint and how fun he is to watch, is he's always at his best when he's working with people who, not just literally but figuratively, look down on him. And when he was Hand of the King, when he was working with our Lord and Savior King Joffrey, he was ridiculed. And, you know, and he got demoted. And he was able to still, you know, move around and ultimately, you know, kill his father. So I don't see that dynamic coming back.
And yet,
I'm a little nervous about.
Last week, even though he was her advisor, he managed to have a funny bit where he just kept sticking it to Theon. So as long as we still have that Tyrion, the wise-ass Tyrion.
But it's different. It's different when because before he was a wise-ass who, he was someone you could make fun of because he was a dwarf, but you couldn't really mess with him because he's a Lannister, and he also had power and money. And now you can't really mess with him.
Well, think about what he's gone through. I mean, you know, he was kind of raised up in...
He
was ridiculed. He was kind of raised up and proved himself to be an able advisor. Then he was brought low again, a drunkard who didn't care. And now he's back advising again. So he's not going to be the sort of in-the-wild Tyrion that I think we really like. But at this point, he can't be the in-the-wild Tyrion and really influence things. He's got no power on his own. So for him to be an effective person on this show, near power.
He can be extremely effective. I'm just saying.
You just want Daenerys to make fun of him all the time?
A little bit, yeah. Okay. I mean, he's more fun when he's having to sort of swallow his pride and then go to work than he is when he's beloved and trusted and given the respect that he does deserve. But that's part of what makes him great.
But that's the journey he's gone on this show, from being a meaningless, afterthought. No, I don't think he's going
to
go back now.
Well, I want to say that nobody has traveled farther this season than Theon. He started off at Winterfell with just one horse. He got past, theoretically, all the Bolton men looking for him and everybody else. And he hitched a boat to the Iron Islands. He took a boat from the islands, pit stop in Volantis Whorehouse, ended up in Meereen, only to turn around and come back. So Theon and Yara, they are part of this armada, and they are heading back. We see that some of the boats
are beautiful.
They're about to enjoy, by the way, the last official reaping that they're allowed.
Right, exactly. So, sure enough, they are part of this armada. We see some of what I assume are the slave ships have got a new dragon mast on the front. Not mast, excuse me, whatever you call the thing on the front of the ship.
The thingy, yeah.
The prow?
Right, the prowl. We've got Grey Worm and his Unsullied. They are just standing. The one thing I don't like about these effects of the boats, I've been on boats. Boats rock, boats roll. Boats are never completely level. So the shot of Grey Worm had the entire Unsullied standing there, not holding on to anything. And it's like, ah, these seas are so smooth. We can just.
It's too bad we didn't have more time in this. Because it doesn't matter how smooth the seas are, there is no doubt that there's a lot of vomiting Dothrakis on this journey. They cannot be used to the ocean. They are going to be seasick. They are going to be just miserable.
Now, I'm trying to look through these sails to see if any represent the Tyrell forces.
Yeah, there's some.
But see the Martell, spear piercing the sun. You definitely see the Greyjoy, and you definitely see the three-headed dragon of House Tyrell.
I don't even know those.
I'm sorry, of House Targaryen.
How come if I was running things, or at least part of the
And the Dothraki are doing well on this boat. Sorry to interrupt.
Okay.
Yeah, they should not be.
Shouldn't there be a boat where the dragons can just land on and get a snack and just chill for a little while? Aren't they going to get tired? Or is this just like a 2-week journey, a 1-day journey? Like, how far is this for a ship and how far is this for a dragon?
Well, that is a great question. We're left to find out. I also wonder, one thing the show has never quite answered for me is that Daenerys, her dragon, she locked them up because her dragons 8 kids.
Right.
That just stopped?
This is what I was thinking.
Let's hear it.
Unless they find some whales breaching or something like that,
they're going to start
picking some people off of the ships. You know, it's like in the fight last week when there was no enemies around.
Right.
That Ramsay just took some people who had not done their chores and flayed and burned them just to warm them up.
Well, he killed his own people with his archers too. Now, what I noticed, if Tyrion really was in control, I think he'd make Varys get in the box for this trip back to Westeros.
That would be great.
If he was really, really the hand, I think he would do it, but. Maybe he's not quite there yet.
Well, another question on Periscope from Holly Huntpants. Will they go straight to Westeros, or will they stop in a place like Volantis and visit the whorehouse again?
The poor bouncer of that whorehouse. I think he deserves a night off. What does this say?
Well, it'd be interesting to see. You know, you could see Tyrion in his old ways, kind of getting his cups a little bit, do a little drinking, do a little whoring.
Wouldn't that be great?
Yeah, well, you know what? Like Cersei, the man knows what he loves.
Yes, he does. And he also confesses it. He would be, I'm a little sad that we didn't get to see him and High Sparrow spend some quality time together. That would have been a fun conversation. But I'm still glad High Sparrow's dead.
All right, so are you excited about Team Daenerys heading into next season? Let's go round robin. Catfish.
Absolutely. Super excited.
Mork.
Very, very excited, although I want Tyrion to get ashamed somehow.
And I admitted this episode, one of the reasons why I rated it so high is it is getting me very hyped, for next season. We're going to give away now another Wyndham Wizard prize. It's the T-shirt, the beard, and the sleeping mask with Tormund Giantsbane's eyes on them. Pull a name, Mork. Let's see who you got.
Here we go. We have Israel Cano, our friend from Facebook.
Hey, hey.
Yeah, Israel, congrats.
Congrats. You know the drill by now. Get us your address. Email fitton@prodigy.net. Guys, we are at over 2 hours, and we've got to get to the thing that I've seen people talking about this. People have been talking about this since when did the first
the opening
come out?
Credits?
No, great point. Where was Old Town in the opening credits?
What?
No, Mork. The first book, A Game of Thrones, came out in the mid-90s. I don't want to say the date. I slightly get it confused. But people have been wondering all this time about Jon Snow's parentage. And finally, Catfish keeps wanting to bring it up.
Ned
He's
Stark.
So friggin' nuts about this.
Ned Stark and a Tavern Girl, right?
Well, we're going to get to it, but first we have to say Triple B.
Triple B.
Bye-bye, Benjen. He has left. I on one of our podcasts. I forget if it was an episode review or a feedback episode. I was like, well, I don't think Benjen, the magic in the wall, will allow Benjen to go south and maybe he'll die. Benjen instead just said, later, losers.
Well, he does. No, he I'm does indicate that he cannot.
Yeah, he can't do it.
He says that he can't do it, which brings up an interesting point.
Yeah.
The interesting point is how are the White Walkers going to wipe out that magic? And
is it the mark of Bran?
And if there is something that allows them to go,
yeah, dramatic.
There's something that doesn't allow them to go south of the wall.
Yeah.
Why is everybody worried in the first place?
So interesting choice of words when Sansa and Baelish were having their little parley by the tree.
Yeah.
As she's walking away. He referred to Jon Snow as he referred her as the trueborn child of Ned Stark,
right.
And Ned and Catelyn Stark. Are they going to follow that person, or are they going to follow a motherless bastard born in the South?
Right.
You don't really think of bastards as being motherless. Really, that's not actually what a motherless bastard would be—an orphan.
Yeah, I guess, but the point is...
The whole point of this show is that the littles don't count.
Oh, sure. Well, the littles don't count, and also...
All right, okay.
Save your firewood. But
right, so Benjen says goodbye. Bye-bye, Benjen. And instead, he doesn't even bring them all the way to the wall. They look like they're several hundred feet away. He takes the horse. He's like, later, cuz, or later, nephew.
He's got to go, just like the guy dropping off Sam and Gilly had to go. He's
got
to go, too.
I got things I got to do. I got to be 2 minutes late to save somebody else.
Will we see Uncle Benjen again, round robin catfish?
Yes, we'll see him with the White Walkers in some sort of fight. If the White Walkers can somehow obscure that magic and get south of the wall, I think Benjen will be able to, too. And remember, winter's moving south.
Well, Benjen said, as long as the wall stands. The evil dead can't get south of it. All right.
Oh, spoiler alert.
Yeah, I dig it.
From the wall's going down.
So, Mork, are we going to see Benjen again? Let's hear your prediction.
Yeah, sure. Why not? We'll see him.
With conviction.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, this is someone who we barely know. He disappeared very early on, very dramatically, and then comes back and does something important, but then he's gone again. So, you know. Showed up at the right time, but, he'll be fine. He survived that long.
And
I'm so glad you asked him to clarify his remarks.
That's what I do.
So what's great is that Uncle Benjen not only didn't get him to the wall, but Mira has to drag Bran to the tree.
She's strong. She's a frog.
He's like, okay, I got to have this vision. I'm the three-eyed raven now. Can you haul me these 5 feet over to the tree?
A little lazy on Bran's
And she's
part.
Just dragging. Look how difficult she has dragging him to 5 feet.
Well, yeah, because he's like 6 foot tall.
Yeah, like a season ago, it was not a big deal. And now he's like 6'4". So,
and so I want to get to the exact words they said here because it struck me slightly as interesting is that she said, are you sure you're ready for this? And then Bran replies, I'm the three-eyed raven now. I have to be ready for this. And was it specifically to see that? Are you ready for this vision? Had they talked about you got to drop me off at a tree so I can see what happened in this tower? What?
No, I don't think so. I think she means to take over. I mean, let's face it.
Yeah.
His training was short-circuited by the attack.
Right.
So what she's saying is, are you ready to do this? And he's saying, I have no choice. I can't. No one can train me anymore. So what's the point? I just got to do it.
And so
he's addicted to these visions now. He's addicted.
So he immediately goes back to this tower. Book readers call it the Tower of Joy. Ned Stark bursts in. He sees his sister. He drops that sword. That sword, which has a sun star bright on the hilt. Book readers will love that. But Ned finds his sister bloody and dead.
And here is where we see, and ever so briefly, what's funny is we don't see the actual vision from Bran,
right.
The two hands holding, but we see that Lyanna Stark is one of the visions that Bran had of a woman bleeding and a man holding her hand. That's the exact color of the dress that the person was wearing in Bran's vision, and I'm sure that that's what Mork remembers.
And so we go in here. Lyanna Stark, in this case, she's saying she wants to be brave. Her bed is bloody. There's a woman in there, and she's saying she's not brave. Ned is just totally devastated by his sister. He's trying to tell her that she won't die. But
it is funny that we don't see the exact scene that Bran saw in his vision.
What do you mean by that?
I mean, unless I was writing a note down at the time, we don't see the hands holding each other.
Oh, you mean, right, the specific shot of the bloody hands.
The specific shot of the bloody hands holding each other, yes.
So what's interesting is that Lyanna leans in, and this is, I found it slightly hard to hear in the episode, and so we've got the closed caption on, and this is officially what they want us to hear, is she says, "Listen to me, Ned." She leans in, she whispers, and the one thing you can hear, as Bran kind of reacts, she says, "If Robert finds out, he'll dot, 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 you know he will, you have to protect him." And then, "Promise me, Ned." This is a famous scene, a famous line. This line is actually in the very first book of Game of Thrones when Ned is thinking back to his sisters and how she said, "Promise me, Ned, promise me, Ned." He turns to see the baby and he is handed little, we now know, Jon Snow, Jon slash... He is Ned Stark's now, bastard, meaning it was a bastard given to Ned Stark. Here he is. He's yours.
Right. Now, the question is, since we there are things that we kind of assume, should we talk about these things?
Let's do it. Go.
Okay. Well, so the assumption is that she was raped, but she was stolen, taken, and then raped by a Targaryen.
Yep.
And so the baby is... half Targaryen, half Stark. And because of the mania, I believe they talked about it when we first met Daenerys and her golden crown brother.
Viserys.
That basically there was a fire sale on killing Targaryens after the war. Any Targaryen, any half Targaryen, any quarter Targaryen, anyone who ever said the word Targaryen in a public square was killed.
Right.
And so... even though she may not be aware of that, although she could be because, you know, things could be very desperate at this point, she at least indicates that Robert will want to kill the child. And as we all know, sure. She was promised to Robert. They were going to be married. And so now we know that Ned Stark kept this secret forever and ever, even from his wife.
Wow.
Why did he keep it from his wife? That would cause so much trouble. Who is she going to tell?
Dare I say it? Maybe he somehow knows, you know, the people like the Spymaster Varys, just saying it out loud. It would break his honor. Ned, with his quote-unquote honor so strong.
Right.
He couldn't say anything. Now, we had some questions in the Periscope. Sadly, I'm only seeing Holly Hunt Pants questions, so everybody ask this. She says, "We don't know that John is a bastard." Now, this is a tricky, tricky thing to say, in that we know she was taken by Rhaegar. Was she kidnapped, like we've always been told, and raped, or did she go with him willingly?
Well, let me finish this
just for a bit, if that's okay. Is that either way, we know Rhaegar had a wife. His wife was Oberyn's sister, who Oberyn kept screaming, and he had kids. Those were the kids Oberyn kept screaming about. So if it was consensual or if it was rape, but Jon Snow...
It still doesn't matter because it was out of wedlock.
He would still be a bastard. But this is something that the show, if it has touched on it, it has been the subtlest, most inconsequential dropping of anything. And that is when the Targaryens invaded Westeros and took it over 300 years before the current series is. It was Aegon the Conqueror and his sister, wives, plural. So some people out in the fandom wonder, well, is it possible that Rhaegar Targaryen, the crown prince, could possibly have married Lyanna? And so then Jon wouldn't be a bastard. It would just be that this guy was into polygamy, and because he's a Targaryen, a dragon lord, he thought he could marry people. That is a debate. I've gone on too long. I cut you off more. Go.
Oh, I think it just goes back to her being, you know, guarded by the Sword of Light in the Tower of Joy. I mean, like, that's not where you just put a baby mama. It's not where you put, you know, that. He was protecting her. She, the greatest swordsman in the history of the Seven Kingdoms, is there protecting this random woman? No. protecting someone that he really cares about, who is about to have his child.
Let's talk about
what... Rhaegar was already dead. You know, he didn't have him at his side. You know, this guy probably could have taken out Robert Baratheon, but no, it didn't work out. He had her there for a reason. So
let's
think, married or not, that was you know, he cared about her. He chose her. He gave her
Yeah, but did he choose her against her will? We don't know that. That's an important thing.
So you know, look, we go back a couple episodes, and Baelish is saying to Sansa, you know, all tens of thousands had to die because Rhaegar chose her. And then she immediately counters with the propaganda of, and, you know, kidnapped her and raped her. But... that's what else are they going to hear about their aunt?
Well, in any case, the important question to me is...
Which, time out. Let me just, I'll just backtrack
okay,
one second.
Ahead.
That's going to be also the story from the king, from Robert Baratheon, about why did they go to war, and also to sort of legitimize the relationship between the Starks and the Baratheon. Like, they could never admit it, even if they want to, and even if Baratheon knew what was really going on, they wouldn't admit it just because it would delegitimize the
throne. Well, regardless, that's kind of lost in time, and what's more important to me now is...
Yeah?
Candy?
it seems to me that, oddly enough... even though Jon Snow was sort of derided for being a lowly bastard,
yeah,
that it would be better for him now if he was indeed a bastard rather than if people found out that he was half Targaryen and half Stark. Don't you agree that he's in a stronger position as Jon Snow, the bastard of Ned Stark, than if people found that out?
Well, it depends what the reaction would be. Let's get to the question of, you know, royalty and how the crown falls. If Jon Snow wasn't a bastard, if somehow Rhaegar had a second marriage and Jon was a true-born heir, Daenerys is his aunt. Daenerys is Jon Snow's aunt, but he's the living son of the crown prince. The throne would go to him before Daenerys in a heartbeat.
Yeah,
this was a true monarch,
right? Because the Mad King was killed, and then it'd go to Rhaegar, and then right. Rhaegar was killed, and then it would go to him.
So let's talk about one of my
other kids who are now dead by Martell.
One of my favorite theories about this show, because it's called The Song of Ice and Fire,
right,
is that it would be Jon Snow and Daenerys together, because one's fire and one's ice. However, the fact that he's his aunt, how does that complicate that situation?
Well,
too much?
Well,
seriously.
Possibly. One of the things that some people might say is in the Daenerys Tyrion scene, he's like, you know, Dario loved you, but he won't be the last. Some people, you know, dreamers say, oh, wouldn't it be Jon and Dany be a cute couple? But the flip side of this is that when you say this book series is entitled A Song of Ice and Fire, why do you even need Daenerys? Jon is a song of ice and fire. He's ice being the Stark. His mother was a Stark, and his father being a Targaryen.
Because he doesn't have any dragons. And also, he's too mopey to be the king.
Well, he's got a never-appearing direwolf. He's got a direwolf that is break glass in emergency only.
Okay, so what you're saying is his position is strengthened as sole leader if it finds out, people find out he's half Stark, half Targaryen. But will the people follow him? I mean, how long would he have to lead them for them to be like, oh, you're half Targaryen? That's okay, instead of...
Well, how about this? How will Jon ever find out? This was Bran saw this in a vision. Bran may tell Mira, but how would Jon find out, number one? Number two, what about everybody else? This is a lot of people have died in this episode. A lot of people have died on this series. But how in the world would anybody just accept it as fact as, hey, this kid here, you know, theoretically, the only person who could say is Mira's father, who was left outside kind of recovering at
right.
the Tower of Joy, or this wet nurse, who I'm willing to bet is Wyla, the woman who Ned Stark told Robert back in season 1, episode 2, was Jon's mother. Now, the book people know that Wyla tied to the Dane family, which is tied to that sword that he left propped on the bed, but even then, would you take Mira's father, Howland Reed, if he just comes out and says, hey, this kid here, he's Rhaegar's true-born son, or this wet nurse. How in the world would people find out?
The only thing is, you know, and again, we have to talk about this has been probably the worst kept guest secret for years.
Yeah.
People have suspected this for years. In fact, one of the reasons why I was so upset when I heard that John died, quote unquote,
right,
was because this hadn't come out yet, and this felt like a very important thing to me. And because it's so important, I think it can't be something that we find out and then nobody else finds out and accepts as true. This has to play in the series. It's so big simply because it may not be the most exciting turn of events, but it's big simply because it's been hidden for so long.
Right.
Yeah, no.
So if it doesn't come out until the end of this season, you know it's important.
Well, so many people predict Daenerys is good at riding that one dragon, but don't we need other people to ride him?
So they
seem to operate pretty well just following the other one. They know what to do.
They listen to her.
They get the gist.
Right. It's like, oh, we're spitting fire?
Yeah.
Okay, I can do that.
I will do that. They're just going to do whatever. Whatever Drogon's doing, they're going to do too. So here's a way that maybe he could prove. First off, yeah, if he bumps into Bran again and finds out, or learns another way, or maybe it's in the book somewhere in the Citadel, who knows? But maybe this is a way for people to find out that he is actually part Targaryen, is he sets himself on fire. And he's got the blood of dragons, and he doesn't burn.
I agree. I agree that it's going to be hard for people to somehow embrace it, but somehow it's going to come out that people will accept it, and then that maybe is what's going to cause the schism between him and Sansa. I think that makes more sense of causing a schism rather than
buying
into Baelish's bullshit, double B.
It would be a schism. Why exactly? He's still part Stark. He's still her aunt's child. He's still her cousin.
Yes, but he is. But he's no longer her brother.
Okay, let me jump in.
It's your cousin.
Yeah. They're still blood relatives, though.
Right. John is Sansa and Arya and Bran's cousin. I want to jump in. People are very sensitive to everything that had happened. And so you're saying, Mork, well, John could jump into fire and prove, you know, he's a Targaryen. But, of course, everybody is saying, a couple of people said, ring the shame bell. And this is a minimal ringing. But, of course, back in season one, when those ice zombies, the whites, the WGI, HTs, excuse me, IG, I totally misspelled
it. Right.
But you know what I mean. When they attacked Commander Mormont in season one, John grabbed the lamp, he threw it at this zombie, the zombie burned, but of course John's hand burnt, and he had it wrapped up for like the next three episodes because it had burned.
No. He only had it wrapped up because he was hiding the fact that it didn't burn.
Ooh.
That could be. I'm going to ring the
spoiler
shame on you.
All right, do it. Go. And then let me also say, well, somebody's saying Viserys was a true Targaryen and he had burnt gold on him. And then let me also say, people, one of the popular fan theories, which people are throwing up in Periscope about how Jon might find out, is we heard he's going to bury Rickon down in the crypts. And so people wonder if there's something down at Lyanna Stark's crypt, like, for example, maybe this sword that was right there, the Sword of the Morning that was right there, or maybe even
a dragon egg.
If you find it near,
see a sword, but that only Bran knows what it is.
And if you polish the sword, it says John is half Targaryen.
It's a secret, right? When you hold it up to the light, it's the Raiders of the Lost Ark.
No, you hold it to the light, and you have to use a little lemon juice too to get it to come out.
Instead of calling this series of books a Song of Ice and Fire, or instead of calling the show Game of Thrones, this amazing story that we've been watching for so long was just called Dragon Wolf. Would it be as good and or as popular?
Hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
Gets to the point.
Okay.
All right. I'm super excited. Now, we have got some, and we all know that there are two R plus L equal J theories.
That's true.
Because the other one has to do with J being Joffrey.
Right.
Obviously.
Everybody go into the Joffrey podcast archives. You'll hear our R plus L equals J episode where Robert plus Liza Aaron nay Tully equals Joffrey. So you'll hear all those secrets. Guys, we've just finished up episode 10.
Oh,
boo.
Before we give out another prize, I want to hear you guys just give your overall thoughts. How about a rating for the whole season out of 10?
I am going to give it... There were a few episodes in the middle that I was down on.
Yeah.
But I'm going to give the season overall... I'm going to have to give it an 8.5.
Ooh.
Strong 8.5.
I'll give it an 8, and I really liked it, and the caveat is the two points are basically because it was stuff that didn't happen last year or should have happened earlier, or it was just sort of the show was digging out of the hole that I felt last year, because there's a couple things last year that I just still am not
okay,
ever going
to
be happy
with.
But I
just have to remind you.
No, don't
I want you
me.
To rate the show we have.
Yes.
Not the show that you want to have.
Well, I'm going to wait.
It's like when we go to the Rumsfeld.
I wrote a letter.
Okay.
I wrote a letter to HBO, and I'm waiting to hear. If they got it.
All right. Well, we got some ratings from some loyal listeners. Yeah, go ahead, Bubba. You first.
Well, before this episode, I went back through it, and I was really only positive on episode 3, episode 5, episode 7, and then last week I was through the moon for episode 9.
Right, and I was pretty high on, I think,
what would you
four.
Say high, what were your, I don't remember, but what were
I'm
your scores?
If it was a rating of 8 or higher, that only happened for me on the third episode, which had, sure enough, the first half of the Tower of Joy in it, the fifth episode, which started with Sansa attacking Littlefinger, saying, hey, if you didn't know about Ramsay, you're either dumb or if you did know, you're my enemy, ended with the hold the door. I love that. Episode 7 was really just snappy dialogue. That's where Lady...
Oh, so good.
Olenna Tyrell told Cersei, she goes, I don't know if you're the worst person. And then episode 9, obviously, with the two battles, the Battle of Fire and the Battle of Ice, and then this one. And so five episodes out of 10, I was really high on. A couple of them, two, I was really low, meaning a 6, and sometimes a 6 was generous. Mm. So just on average, I'm going to give season 6, I'll give it a 8. Because it ended strong, I'm going to give it 8 out of 10. I'm going to be generous because I love these last two so much. So, Catfish, yeah. You were saying some fans had some ratings. Let's hear them.
Yeah, sorry. Sometimes it's hard to scroll through. We got somebody with a 9.5, Ooh. Somebody with, I think, an 8.5.
Okay.
So, in general, this season was received very well. And last week we talked about what our favorite season was.
Yeah.
And I do think that the first season, because it was able to do something that I thought was impossible, was my favorite season. That doesn't mean it was the best season of the show, but it was favorite because I never thought I could see a show like this so well done. And so I'm most impressed by that season, but I think this is my second favorite season.
Wow.
Wow.
It is not my second favorite. I almost think you have to take the first season out of the conversation because I think I have finally read the first book. I'm reading basically as quickly as the books are being written.
Perfect.
Yeah. So,
so as not to be disappointed.
No, but I think it's fair to say that the first book is by far the best book.
I agree.
And it's like a perfect book. So the first season, I don't think you really count it. I mean, it's just too good.
I count it because I think if you read that book before the series came out, you thought, there is no way anyone is going to do this justice.
Probably. Sure. No. I mean, look, I'm just saying.
I mean, there was hopes when I heard HBO was doing it. I thought, okay, at least the
My
good
point is that every
values.
Season is a every season is a battle for second. Is my
so
point.
What is your ignoring? What do you go if you ignore the first season? Then what? Which one?
I would go. I would go 4, 2, 3, 6, and then 5.
Oh yeah.
Ooh, so this is your second least favorite,
yeah.
Season.
Sure.
Okay. I want to get in on this mix.
But that doesn't mean it was bad.
I want to get in on this mix. I'm with Catfish. Season 1, I think, is the best. What's interesting is it had the lowest budget. And so some of these things we see in later seasons, boy, if they had this money in season 1, it would have been like,
yeah,
holy smokes. But I'm going to go season 1 number 1. I'm going to go season... Oh, boy, it's so tricky. I'm going to go season... Oh, boy, it's tough. I'm going to go season 4, 3, 2, and 6 are about tied, and then 5 just way down. Maybe 6 ahead of 2 based on these final two episodes.
Oh, I agree. I think last year was probably my least favorite season.
Yeah.
For sure. I don't know if I can rank the rest of them, but 1, 6, and then da-da-da-da-da. And then 5.
Four was basically because of the red wedding, and
well, that was 3 though.
Oh well, then what?
Double shame. Double shame.
All right, guys, we are here. Closing in on 2.5 hours. We've got to give away a lot more prizes. And so let's give away a prize right now. What do we have so many still, Catfish. What do you want to do now?
Let's give away two prizes.
Let's give away two. That's a great
We're going to give away
Anarchy.
Two.
It's like
we are going to give away two presents. Of the small figurines that you put together with, I want to say, delicacy and patience. And make sure you put it out. Put out like a white napkin underneath. So you make sure you don't lose any of these pieces when you open the bag.
Catfish, each grab one.
Excellent.
Or
all right, the first winner of one of these prizes is from Twitter. Oh, one of my favorite double L's, at Jolly Roger Rescue. You won.
Hello.
Congratulations.
Oh, my God. I am so excited because I pulled another heavy-duty loyal listener.
All right, so we had to change a battery. Catfish, you just pulled a prize winner. Who is it?
From an iTunes review that she gave us that was 5 stars, Stephanie Persephone won for iTunes review.
I knew it.
Yay! Yeah. You win one of these. So we had two of our heavy-duty listeners just won the last two prizes.
Heck yeah. Great work. Now we're going to – we've done it all season long. We've been doing it ever since we started the show. We love to give shout-outs to people who give us written reviews on iTunes. It's apparently very important for marketing that you give us not just stars but written reviews on iTunes. So we opened it up to Stitcher 2. So we're going to jump in, and I'm going to read some that you wonderful listeners, thank you so much, have given us. Real quickly, at the USA iTunes store, we got it from, I don't even want to try to pronounce this crazy name. It's DividXBiz. I think it was just any letters, characters they could type. He gives us a 5-star review, double J, double J, Joffrey Justice. He say, I'd like to start my review the way I start all my The Joffrey Podcast reviews and thank my Twitter followers. Boy, this person's mocking me. Well, I love it. Since I don't have Twitter, thank you all for not following me. When I settle down to listen to this great podcast, I enjoy with some honey ducked, roasted onions, dipped in gravy, boiled eggs, fish stew, lemon cakes, pigeon.
Skip ahead.
But Catfish, I have 3 more pages of delicious eats. Okay. It seems important. Or else, why would I be here? The podcast is amazing. Thank you so much for saying that. It's the Double P.
Double P?
Perfect podcast. The two hosts have a great sense of humor and spread the good word of his grace, the one true king, King Joffrey. They do a great job for all double L's.
Double L's?
Loyal listeners, enriching our Game of Thrones experience while straightening the unstraighteners. Catfish does an amazing job where, not unlike our great King Joffrey, who pretends to be dead to catch the real usurpers, Catfish pretends to forget major storylines and plots. My favorite part of the podcast are the readings of the unreleased POV Joffrey chapters. Amazing work. I just hope that in his effort to rid King's Landing of terrible cats, our great king did not unknowingly cause the sparrow problem. Wait, what? Edit. Unfortunately, I do not have enough time for double S's in this review. Double S's, the spinoff specials. I will end my review the way I want to end all of my The Joffrey Podcast reviews, with my Joffrey of the Week. This week's Joffrey of the Week was courtesy of Ramsay. Ramsay, like King Joffrey, showed us how a true leader leads his troop from behind. He showed an amazing job with arrows, creating pincushion of the double S's, Surly Stark. And at the end, faked his death. Ramsay faked his death, too. Oh, no, to catch the real usurpers. I'm CJG Man, your favorite CJG Man. Take that, CJG Man 67. Join me next week for another review of the Joffrey of Podcast.
Best review ever edition.
Love it. Okay.
Impressive.
We got one that's much shorter. Mork, why don't you read this next one?
Oh, man. This is from Disney Chick 56.
Yeah.
4 stars.
Four stars.
Solid stars. These guys are tongue-in-cheek and funny. Love the podcast. Long live Joffrey.
Thank you so much. Catfish, why don't you read one?
All right, one more. This is from T. Ledgerwood, spreading the truth of our king, Joffrey. 5-star review. T. Ledgerwood says, Bubba and Catfish host a Game of Thrones podcast worthy of double A praise.
Double A?
Auditory awesomeness.
Oh, yeah.
The only thing that makes this podcast greater would be if double J.
Double J.
That's right, if Joffrey joined.
Ah.
But he has business to tend to first. Only King Joffrey is wise enough to decide when the time is right to show he faked his death, identify and punish his usurpers, and reclaim his throne. At that point, if he isn't busy dealing with other important matters, he may have time to join Bub and Catfish to show them how a podcast is properly run. Until then, we can rely on our two intrepid hosts to spread the glorious gospel. He missed it. That's a double G.
Oh, no.
Glorious gospel of Joffrey.
Here's one from Tall Tyrion Lannister, 5 stars. The best podcast in this solar system. The first time I listened to this podcast, it was like Arbor Gold was flowing through my ears. This podcast is the perfect mix of Game of Thrones humor and Double L.
Double L?
Lovable leader that is King Joffrey.
He is lovable.
Needs less Starks and evil uncles and more Bubba and Catfish. Listen to the Joffrey podcast. You'll be happier than Ramsay's hounds in a room full of Samwell Tarleys.
Oh, my God. Our reviewers are the best.
Bet against Samwell
Tarleys. We're the funniest reviewers.
Why don't you read this one from Little Mormont?
Little Mormont, say no more. 5 stars. This is the podcast for both novice and professional Game of Thrones fans.
Woo-hoo. I represent the novice.
Yes, shame bell. This humorous duo could make even Lady Mormont crack a smile.
Ooh, tough job.
I will be sad when Game of Thrones ends because then this podcast will also end. That's kind of morbid. 3 cheers for Joffrey. Yay!
Hip hip hooray, hip hip hooray, hip hip hooray.
Thank you so much.
Nice. Oh, so good.
Do you want to read this one from CW?
I will. It says, thanks for the double S's.
Yeah, 5 stars.
CW10074 says, this is the first time I've ever reviewed anything on iTunes. Wow. As a double L.
Double
bone.
What?
A loyal listener.
Oh, yeah.
I count on Bubba and Catfish to add humor and sarcasm to my day. Thanks for often bringing an SS double S.
What?
Sansa Smirk to my face.
Thank you so much. And our final new one from the U.S. iTunes store is from Mark Studebaker. He's 5 stars, Your Grace. He says, informative, fun, and quirky. Such a great podcast. Bubba and Catnip, knock it out of the park. We got 2 from the great island of UK.
Oh, man.
Which I don't know if it's still a UK anymore after the current events of this week.
It may not be.
People in the future, write to us on Twitter and tell us if it's still together. Here's one from The Sword of the Moaning.
Oh, yeah.
5 stars. It's called A Great Podcast Hosted by 2 CCs.
Double C's?
Cool chaps. Living as I do. Alone in my stout keep with no wife to tell me what to do, I sometimes suffer from the boredom, uncleanliness, and bouts of madness.
He sounds like the High Sparrow.
Needing some friends, I listen to podcasts to try and get me through this dismal existence.
Oh, God.
This, the Sword of the Moaning, is moaning, all right. After much searching, I found the Joffrey podcast helps to quell the voices in my head by providing voices in my head. These voices belong to Bubba and Catfish, however, 2 CCs, cool chaps who are extremely knowledgeable and passionate about Game of Thrones, as well as unwavering in their worship of the one true king, King Joffrey. Follow him, follow them, follow me. It's lovely stuff. And we had another one from the UK iTunes store from Hodor's Smarter Brother. Read it, Mort.
Simply the best. 5 stars. In the words of Tina Turner, this is simply the best. Game of Thrones podcast available.
Thank you.
Not only do Bubba and Catfish make me laugh approximately 8 times per podcast, 7 more than most, but they are very well informed and know their stuff. These are the sort of people I would want to have a beer with. Greetings from England. Keep up the good work. Keep up the good work, chaps. Mark.
That would be a warm beer.
No one knows how long the show is. No one's doing the math on the laughs per episode.
All right.
We'll take it.
We got 2 new Stitcher reviews, and then people, we promise, will be done. Hit it, Catfish.
All right. Excellent. I've got this. I like it. Sometimes I don't believe the 5-star reviews.
Okay.
But I believe this one because it's a 4-star review.
Ooh.
So might have a few quibbles, but overall, excellent.
Let's hear it. This is
by Stannis on Fire.
Oh, yeah.
The description is, really well put together program.
It is really well put together.
This show is really enjoyable. I'm fairly new to it. I did find it funny at first that the host used this silly initial joke where they give it a rating and say it's 10 double S's.
Double S's?
Yeah, he doesn't go on to say what that is. Where the other host asks what it means and the first delivers the punchline, i.e. smirking Sansa's.
All right.
He did come up with it. While it is a bit funny and can be used a few times, it gets totally overused as a crutch in each episode.
Oh,
double
no.
S's.
They go to people on Periscope for these jokes again and again as well. If they just use a little less, they would get an extra star.
Aww.
They are funny enough without the silly crutch having to be overused. It's good, but less is more. The rest of the podcast and their format is spot on. I will listen to this more. Thank you very much, Stannis on Fire.
Heck yeah.
It's got some criticisms.
Yeah.
It's all right.
We'll take it. And this final double W 5-star review from Stitcher. Double W, wonderfully witty. These guys have great chemistry. They do a job of serious analysis of the show, spiked with a whole bunch of humor and shame bells.
Humor.
If you can't take a joke or are on an easily offended and delicate flower, maybe skip this one. Or don't.
True story.
Some people like being grumpy. All right.
All right.
Especially our good friend, Grumpy Gobert.
And speaking of that, before we give out our Joffreys of the Year, we got to get rid of the rest of these prizes.
Okay,
let's get rid of them.
I'll pull them up. First of all, we have got 2 more Wyndham Wizard outfits. That is the beard. That is the iPad. Not the
iPad. Right.
The iPad. The sleeping eye, whatever.
Did you just say you're giving your iPad away as a prize?
Away. And We have, and the beard, we've got two of those. And then we've got some, I've got a secret stash of things as well to give away.
Ooh.
And we've got two posters. So, go ahead,
right,
Mork, draw a name, Mork.
All right, sorry, I just need this to be objective and true in front of everyone. Here it is. From the land of Facebook, Ms. Nikki Powell.
Nikki Powell.
Nikki Powell, congratulations.
You're a winner. And the next winner is, and the next winner.
This is for the iPad?
No, this is for
Let's
these
give it away. He's
Wyndham
not
Wizard
looking.
Prizes. This is also from Facebook, Ron Asher. Ron Asher, you are a wonderful wizard, winner. Thank you so much. Get ready. Okay, so now we're going to give away some prizes that you, this is going to be tricky. You have to be in the United States to be able to use them. They're special DVDs that are only available on U.S. or possibly Canada's region of DVDs. So hold it up, Catfish. What is that first prize? It is.
The first prize is on DVD, the entire complete first season of Mr. Robot.
Yes.
Oh.
Fancy. Emmy promotional style.
That's right. So, Mr. Robot, Game of Thrones just ended. You need a good show. This is the first season in a very fancy case of Mr. Robot. Catfish, why don't you draw a name?
I would say definitely season 4 of Mr. Robot is the best one.
Okay. So, Catfish, who is our winner? Are they in the U.S., please God?
I don't know, but they have a British name, Graham Simonelli.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, no, that is Graham in the U.K. Graham...
Okay, we'll put this aside.
Graham, we're going to give you...
Graham gets the iPad. Graham gets CJG Man's iPad.
No, Graham will give a poster, too. So we can give a poster to Graham. Graham, these posters are great, and unlike those DVDs, they'll work. The poster will work no matter where you are. So pull another one for the prize.
Oh, it's our friend Tracy.
Oh, wow.
Tracy McFarland. Your Facebook entry won you this prize.
Excellent. Tracy won. All right. So now, Mork, I want you to pull one out. Pull
All
one.
Right.
We're going to give away this AMC box.
That.
Describe the box, Catfish, real quick.
Okay. Well, these are a bunch of shows from AMC. And because these are promotional materials, they're very nice. Mm. But you may only be getting partial seasons of all their shows.
All righty. So, Mork, who won this?
This is for some guy named Matt Papa.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
Papa
Matt 2. Papa.
I don't know.
Excellent. Yeah. Congratulations, Matt Papa. You won. And you know what? Why don't we go ahead and give away the piece de resistance before we give away the final poster? So, Catfish. That's Graham for the poster. So give away.
Right, the last thing that we have are Emmy promotional materials for HBO. And so that is a whole bunch of everything from HBO.
This is a fancy box and Emmy promotional 2016. You're going to get to sample every single show.
Wow.
HBO is promoting, including their movies.
Do they include 7 Days in Hell starring Jeremy Targaryen?
They might indeed, which Ooh. I found to be very amusing.
I thought it was great.
I actually voted for him for, I think it was supporting...
Lead.
In a movie.
Lead. He was the lead.
All right, so this is the piece de resistance. This is a great prize. Catfish, pull a name out of the bowl and go to the microphone and tell this lucky winner. Hopefully they're in the United States. If they're not...
This is Benji Doss from Facebook.
All right, yeah. Benji. Benji, you just won this HBO Emmy 2016 prize. Congratulations. All right, so we have one more Joffrey poster to give away. I have to be completely honest. I don't want to reach into this crazy tube and pull it out. So let's just go away. The gift that keeps on giving, this is Joffrey final poster. And it is going to this one right here. The final winner is... Okay, this is a iTunes review. It's Girl600_podcast. Girl600_podcast, you won the last poster that we're going to be giving away. Congratulations.
There may not be anything in here because we didn't show it.
There are two in there. All right, so we are closing in on 3 hours. We've got to end this. So let's go ahead and give our Joffrey of the Year. This is where we talk about the... thing on the show, the character on the show, the thing in real life, the thing that inspires us to be like His Grace, King Joffrey, the thing that really, more than anything, makes us want to keep going, as Joffrey continues to fake his death to catch the real usurpers. So, Catfish, are you ready? Let us hear who you have as your Joffrey of the year.
Sadly, this is not going to be a surprise.
Oh, no.
I have wanted to say this is the Joffrey of the week just about every week.
Okay.
It's been mentioned a couple of times by our viewers, so it's not a surprise.
All right.
But my Joffrey of the year is none other than a man in real life who would bring us all together.
Sure.
And he would keep the White Walkers on the other side of that wall he's going to build. Donald Trump is my Joffrey of the year.
The wall is going to be between us and Canada. Then is that... That's amazing.
Listen, we need a wall on the bottom and then a wall on the top. And then a wall on the left and a wall on the right. We got to wall ourselves in.
You're probably right.
Mork.
Well done.
Season 6 just ended. Do you want to give us your Joffrey of the year?
I would like to give us a Joffrey of the year. And this is, I wish it was a real person. I really do. Unfortunately, it's not.
Okay.
But for doing her son's legacy proud, for allowing him to come back one day to do his good work, I give the Joffrey of the year to the only person who deserves it, Cersei Lannister.
Oh.
She crushed.
She blew up.
She blew people up in a fun way, with green fire. It's the only way you're allowed to blow people up. No, I think she retook the throne. I was a big fan of her all year. Loved it.
Okay. All right. So now it is finally, I've been waiting so long. It is finally my time to name my Joffrey of the year. And folks, they were in this episode.
A whole year.
Who, and guess what? I think when you get the DVD extra, you're going to want to look at this character very closely because it is His Grace King Joffrey. King Joffrey is in this episode. He is my Joffrey of the week, and he says two words. He says, "Very sorry." He is undercover as a footman to Tommen. But Joffrey says the things, with only two words, "Very sorry." He convinces Tommen to stop being a usurper and kill himself. I'm upset that they revealed Arya was wearing a fake mask and they didn't, you know, have Joffrey take off his disguise after usurper younger brother Tommen killed himself.
You knew that he was coming back after they did the foreshadowing by seeing a person pretend to be Joffrey twice and die.
Right.
You knew they couldn't do that to show the greatest human being, real or fictional ever, dying twice without giving us a little taste of seeing him come back. So you're absolutely right. That was Joffrey right there. So Joffrey is the Joffrey of the year.
Yeah, so everybody, on my DVR, it's about 28 minutes in. Just pause it when King Joffrey says, "Very sorry." And he does the one thing that nobody could do. Get rid of that annoying Tommen.
All little brothers are annoying. Take it from my older sister.
All right. So on Friday, listen, get ready for the feedback show. And in a couple of weeks, get ready for our season wrap-up spectacular.
Ooh, it is going to be.
With all the fun extras. Everybody, real quickly, say how the listeners can get you on Twitter. Mark.
It's extraordinary with a W in front of the second R.
I love that. This is Catfish, and you can hit me up at CJGman67.
I'm Bubba. You can find me on Twitter at Fit and Trim. That's FitenTrim, at Fit and Trim on Twitter. And so, if you've listened to us for 3 hours, you know what? Send your email in, too. Maybe I got some extra prizes laying around here. But thank you so much.
Right.
And you'll hear us next time on The Joffrey of Podcasts.
Joffrey is Alive edition.
Season 9 of the show is going to be all Joffrey.